self-promotion.
Hi! Good to see you. How are you? Good to see you. Two men.
I was expecting a dress.
Well, we were going to do that route, actually, but we thought, I don't know, Madonna got something here. We figured, what the hell?
Yeah,
we gotta watch that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I saw the movie.
Are you Bob?
Yeah, who are you?
Jim, the Mad Monk. How are you, bud?
I have a month in my car.
What's your name?
Michael Monk.
Michael Monk?
Yes. All right.
Are you Jim Monk?
Yes.
It's the last name, eh?
Well, actually not.
Kind of like Dobbs is.
What you call yourself.
Yes, exactly.
In public. In public, you're a monk.
Yes.
Yes, you are now. The tape recorder's going.
Oh, praise him! Praise Bob. You know,
oh, it's just beginning.
Bob has to wait. I'm sorry Bob had to wait, but that's the way it goes.
I got slack, man. I get bums haircuts, you know, the whole thing. Look at that. I got that couple together while we're waiting. You know, the lonely people, they're everywhere.
That's right, Bob. I hear that. I hear it well. Well, you know, Toronto. Wow. What can you say?
Indianapolis.
You betcha.
It's Indianapolis.
Well, that's funny you should say that, Bob, because we're trying to decide if it was either Denver,
or
where's the other spot we were thinking of, Mike? It was across. Well, it has the flatness of Dallas, of course.
Right.
We were thinking San Diego, Denver, and Dallas.
Yeah, Michael thought the beach curve was a little San Diego-ish.
You haven't been to Indianapolis?
Is it really?
Toronto? We went to WrestleMania America. 8 a couple months ago in April. And we took some young kids, and they never been out of Toronto much, but they thought they were in Toronto while they were in Indianapolis. It was amazing. Same level of building, same style. And I was just looking at this city again today, and it looks like Indianapolis. So check that out. Ask them for some tourist photos.
Yeah. So, Bob, tell me, how would you define Toronto? What's the... I've read all your architecture books. So I just want to know
what it is?
You invented postmodernism before there was modernism, so...
That's right.
You know, you're way ahead of the game, I know that, but I just want to...
Whipping postmodernism.
That's right. The clue is,
the reason I'm here is, if you know about the number 22, have you heard about it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this is 2-run-2. The embedment is in the name Toronto.
I get it!
Okay, so but run 22.
Hold on a second.
Get it.
In the Mississauga Indian language, Toronto means the meeting place.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, we're experiencing that now, right, Bob?
Yes, but for me, it's technically the Secret Council 10 meeting place for the solar government, which, you know, I've been broadcasting public these meetings for years on the radio.
Right.
We have meetings for public exposure.
And that's also why the CN Tower is there as a beacon call for people around the world and then an outside world. And that's why we just built the Sky Dome so we can accommodate, like, huge flying ships that would need some kind of cover from our environment once they've landed. So we built this dome so they can be shielded.
Yep. Bob, that Sky Dome, I'm impressed with your work there. I really am impressed with the Sky Dome. I mean it. I don't get really...
Well, see that guy? Look, 5-2-7. 7, if you look in our liner notes in the CD,
right.
You see that 22 is obsolete 7, retrieved 18, it's going to push into flip into 14.
Yep.
So that fucking guy is way out of whack with the Bob vibe with that fucking shirt number.
That's right.
This makes me cry to see this. You know, the failure of my work in Toronto.
But you know what? He's in touch with the monk work because
2
is 7, which is the 7th ray, which, of course, Mike and I are trying to bring down to planet Earth. That's our function.
Oh, Jesus. We had Ray Ray for a whole summer.
7 rays.
Yeah, Ray called in on the summer of 90.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and he did whole seminars on each ray. Mm. But I can't remember what color the 7th one is.
Purple. Is it like violet?
That's
violet.
Connie's color. That's my wife's color. Yep.
Totally wild, huh?
So you want to bring in the purple vibe.
We're trying to bring in as Michael will describe this further, I'm sure, but because I'm doing all the talking now, because tomorrow for 3 hours I'm miming the whole presentation. So.
And Mike is
seriously,
talking.
Yeah,
we know Charlie. You're going to the This Ain't the Rosedale Library bookstore?
Right.
Yeah.
No, we're doing we're doing a presentation at the CMPA back here.
CMPA?
That's the Canadian
Magazine Publishers Association.
Yeah, right.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, you've retrieved the value of magazines and they appreciate it?
That's right. We are the founders of Dashboard Publishing. And they're recognizing that.
You're not the founders, come on.
No, okay. Bob was the founder. But let's face it, without you, Bob, nothing would be.
Nothing would
be. In the beginning,
I was the original. You remember? You know, the first public, in the 60s, the first reference to me was the introduction to Tom Robbins, Even Cowgirls Get the Blues.
Yeah.
You know, 70s, actually. Yeah.
Well, that book came up with 1970?
75.
No, really? No, no, 70, 71. Early, no, Jerry doesn't know. Jerry, look how young he is.
I've read that. Jerry knows.
Okay, but Jerry anyways, okay. Robbins wrote it in the 60s Jerry with the help of my friends, the Cosmic Awareness people in Seattle, which is where he's from, you know.
Right. But oh, that's right!
Yeah, see?
Not only Blue Rodeo.
That's right.
Not only... You, Bob.
Yeah.
But Tom Robbins.
That's intense.
And he was influenced a lot by Dave Worster, the channel for Cosmic Awareness. They did acid sessions. Dave Worster stood acid.
Dave Worster did acid with Tom Robbins.
Oh yeah, and Robbins and Dave Worster was the expert because he worked with Humphrey Osmond before Leary got into acid in the late 50s.
Wow.
They got the first Swiss acid. But what was they talking? Oh, so Tom Robbins, his introduction to Cowgirl, his foreword to that novel. Talks about the amoeba as being
goodness.
The parasite all through evolution, if you remember that.
Right.
That's me. Bob.
That's it.
I've been slacking it just riding through evolution from the beginning.
I love it, Bob.
So I'm not only responsible for man-made artifacts, but for natural artifacts, you know, nature itself.
Right, exactly.
Because cool. The amoeba was there at the beginning.
Right on. I hear that.
And, of course, when I split, you know, that's I created Connie. Right?
Right. Well, we don't know all the cosmology, but you're going to have to fill us in. We'll say right when we don't know.
Well, Connie's a lot more interesting than Bob.
Yeah, yours to Bob. She's going to prove I'm Bob. She's got the cure for AIDS. But you can't talk about that.
Okay.
That'll be out in a few months, and it sounds silly, but it's fucking amazing. We do have it.
Okay. Look at it.
No, where's the torch? Now, hey.
Where are we now?
Jerry, show them who's up in the building, the top floor of that.
That's right.
Is the producer for RCD. Torstar, the owner of the building, Torstar.
Love it.
So do you want to...
Is this here? He is the producer of your CD.
Yeah. Do you have a CD in the car?
Oh, I have to leave the magazine.
Yeah.
Let me just put it on the seat.
Okay. Well, I would say Bob, you have a Monk magazine, Masters of Nomadic Knowledge.
He doesn't
a
have
a particular issue?
Men only Nick knows.
The only article I paid attention to...
I have one. I have one for you.
Good, because the only article I was... actually riveted to.
No, I'll get more of her later.
The only article that I paid attention to was this fucking idiot Church of Dawn that you guys interviewed.
Vander Heifer-Kleet.
Yeah.
In Arkansas, right, Jane.
He called himself Church of Dawn.
Is that it? Oh, I thought he was in the Louvre.
No, well, there's a guy. Remember?
He was Dawn.
Yeah, there was a Church of Dawn guy, and that's the article that stood out of the issues I've looked at.
Right. Well, it was a pretty good article.
Because they say that about me. They say that Bob in Toronto is not even Dave or Bill or Jim or Don.
He's not powerful enough to even be the anti-Bob.
Yeah. They're so pissed off that we're proving.
Well, I just had a nice
argument
with Stang on the phone the other day.
Did you?
Oh, man.
Look at this.
Blew up.
Hey, you guys see the headlines? Another Metro-Royal split now. Bob and Connie's anniversary is tomorrow, and I do a memo to Prince Charles in the CD, and that's because this is happening. You know, we are breaking up that fucking oligarch.
That's right. See, that's what you're bringing to the planet.
Yeah.
You're breaking up oligarchy.
Yeah. Oh, that's yeah. Nice. I read Lockdown Bob Rule, which would be so much slack for everybody except for this guy, because he's not paying attention. Not acoustic space, buddy. Acoustic space obsolete. Tactile space.
Funny.
Tactile space.
Beautiful. I gotta give him that monk yet. Oh, so he continues. You know, you gotta keep him going because he's got a place too.
Oh, but they have to learn first. They have to repent. You know, they have to get. Look at this guy. Look, he's still eating sugar. He doesn't know.
He doesn't get it.
Yeah,
All right.
Can't eat sugar until you overcome it. Then you can have it. So you stay healthy.
All right, Bob. We're with it.
Look at that guy.
Look at him. Is he there or is he not there?
That's a string being just kind of peanut there.
Mining death.
Yeah.
Mining death. I love it.
Now, Jerry, you're late. You got the security locked down?
I deal with that, yeah.
Jerry, I love it. Hey, I didn't get to tell you, Michael didn't get to finish. You know, Michael's been speaking all this time. Michael, you want to shut up a bit?
Yeah.
Listen.
The silent C from Mike.
Mike's going to get to talk for 3 hours tomorrow, so he knows he's got his revenge on me.
You have a thing you're going to do, a
three
mine.
3 hours on how... Bob came into our lives and caused us produced the world's only mobile magazine.
Well, you know, the Monk is the most appropriate title to sum up the baby boomer generation, because McLuhan said in the 60s that the TV kids had become wandering gypsy scholars. And that's Monks.
Bob, I'm going to quote you on that.
Yeah.
Jerry, take that part from the tape. We're going to use it in the next promo piece. That's the truth.
Yeah.
And
that's why you guys are hitting a chord there with the archetype, because the Monk is what that resonates with this retrieved medieval environment which our generation has been.
Exactly.
The information overload world.
Exactly.
Everybody's reduced to gypsy, wandering gypsy scholar status. And of course, anything can be studied, so universities are out of date and obsolete and confused by this.
Right.
They've overeducated everybody so that the whole world has become a campus.
Right.
And since AIDS came on the scene, everybody had to become kind of celibate on the campus. But once Connie releases the AIDS cure, then the campus will... you know what happened.
Yeah.
You shouldn't say.
No, but Bob's on the money here with this wandering gypsy scholars. That is exactly the idea.
Yeah.
Seriously, that is the idea of Monk.
Yeah.
Is the book out?
Huh?
Is the book out?
The book, we sent the second draft in. It'll be out next spring.
Oh, okay. So I thought you were promoting that. That's why you're here.
No, they
wasn't a book signing yet.
It's not a book signing. Although some people call magazine.
You told me it was a book signing.
I keep saying book. It's hard to say magazine signing. You know, nobody signs magazines, but we're going to be signing magazines and T-shirts.
Yeah.
And some in the trade, in the magazine trade, people call magazines books.
Really?
Yeah. They say, I like your book. You got a good book.
Is that American?
That's an American term.
Yeah.
Right. We're in Canada?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait a minute. I thought we were going to some seafood place. And my God, Bob, you've taken us up here. You've taken us above
two run two.
Look at the building, Toronto Star.
Look at it.
Two star, we're going
two
higher.
Run
than
two run two. Oh, we just did it. I wanted to see it. Can we replay that, Bob? Can you take the. No, we'll do it later.
No.
Oh, God.
It's a lot of effort to replay reality in full.
Right.
He can do it.
I think he and Ivan are separated first and they don't know it.
Ivan.
Staying.
Wait, he doesn't look like him.
No, I really do. Your voice and his, you have a southern voice and you don't even know it.
You'll have to listen.
No, seriously.
It is. You are from the same
soul family. Soul family.
but he doesn't
look there's
like
a guy in Little Rock who talks this kind of thing.
A guy in
a Bobette, a Bobster, a Bobstradamus.
Yes.
Indeed we do. We are
Boulanger.
We belong.
He knew he had to check with us right away or get us out of here.
That's right. That's like, there was a quick choice in his mind. A or B?
The vibe is a little too noisy for him.
Too much. Too
Z? World Heartaches, down in the UK.
You know what? This place is moving.
Yeah, it's rotating.
Oh, no, that's the Zen question. Is the place moving or are we moving?
This is a visual-based bias. I mean...
Okay, here's another question.
Yeah.
Is your mind moving or is the building moving?
You're using anthropomorphic references. You think we still have a mind, still have a body. When we're discarded and electrified, we have new organs, new lungs, new central nervous systems, a whole new thing that you can't use any of these cultural images to refer to.
What do you think of that, Mike?
You have to begin with Finnegan's Wake. That's where you begin.
Right.
Yeah. You ever tried to look at Finnegan's Wake?
I tried to do a dramatic interp of Ulysses in high school.
Did you?
Yeah, it's possible. Sea change. It was all about sea change. It was Daedalus and swimming and sea changes. Remember that scene?
Oh, yeah. On the strand.
Yeah,
walking on the strand.
Yeah, but I just never understood it. But I did a good accent of Daedalus.
Daedalus?
How did he do it? It's, I didn't quite have it.
Where was this? Where was your schooling?
Nebraska. Creighton Prep.
Nebraska?
There's no such place in Nebraska.
Yes, there is.
It's a farmland, like Ontario.
We don't hear that term much around here in Toronto, Nebraska.
No.
We don't talk about you guys.
No, it's not big. It's not big yet. We're getting there.
Omaha.
Oh, my God.
This is really a cafeteria.
This is great.
Oh, yeah, that's just a rotating cafeteria. Same thing.
But what were you saying about? We're giving you the best view of the perspective. So when you, that is Toronto Island. Yeah, there's the whole. See the little houses over there?
Yeah.
That's the little
common community place that is always, the developers are always trying to kick out, but they kind of lock it down now. But Ultimate 70s had a battle. Over there is the Royal Yacht Club. They're the ones that do the tall ships that come into New York every now and then. And that's the core of the Canadian oligarchy.
Do you feel like a real, still that sort of Woodstock vibe?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all, it's counter-age, the alternative, what is it? Counter-culture people. You got low rent over there, and they stayed there all through the 70s, and they just do artistic work. And
how many people live there?
I don't know.
Oh, I think 600.
Yeah. And then there's an airport over there.
Is this a little airport for the island?
Yeah, it's a business airport. It's a, you know, not like Air Canada stuff. Helicopter.
Okay.
Jerry.
Did you ask for that?
What do you want to say?
You sit beside Mike.
You want to sit beside Mike?
No, you sit beside Mike. Or no, you take your choice, but... Maybe since I have
choice is better.
Yeah, I'm going to take this.
That's where you want to be, right?
Yeah, because I want to look at all three.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
You got it, Bob. I understand.
Nice. I've got to, I have, you know, I have to watch everybody.
Yeah, I do too. Hey, Bob, you Gemini.
Why would you ask that?
Because only I'm the only person, you're the only person I know who has that same request that he wants to watch everybody. And that's exactly how I am.
Well, many people think I'm a Gemini.
But you're not. You have too much fire.
No. Oh, yeah. No, I'm not Gemini. But you, for most people who come across me, they conclude that I'm a Gemini. So that's why it's an accurate perception for a general collective
Gemini,
consensus.
For Gemini rising. But it could be your
Well,
give me some time. Give me some time. Give me some time. Because I'm very good at this, actually.
Well,
you need I should just stop.
Let's get this over with.
Of course. Beautiful. Yeah, do you see it?
I just love the cover.
Well, we are sitting in a CD. Where you pick
your You have seen the cover before.
Yes, it's excellent. Well, this is in New York.
It's
in Europe.
Huh? Yeah, right, yeah.
It's
in the Mondo 2000.
Yeah,
Jerry
did.
Jerry found the image. And the basic theme on the CD is everything's basically disappeared.
Well,
and I will show you some other things that illustrate that.
Well, look at this part of the view we got from Rockpool.
They put the address.
Yeah.
See the last line?
See the last line.
Ontario?
No. The
a record you absolutely cannot resist or ignore.
Isn't that amazing? We could use that for much profit.
Yeah.
For the thing.
See, the thing is, we don't even know these guys either.
That's better. The best reviews I got, people I've never known.
Yeah. That's the weirdest thing. I was so surprised.
No, that's really sweet. That's good.
Yeah, that was a very good thing.
So I'll just show you.
Well, schmooze us up here. Come on, Bob.
Yeah, I just want to develop some themes. Like you asked about.
I'm a schmoozer, man. I love to be schmoozed.
Okay,
Bob. Bob, got to go into the schmooze mode.
Here's our ad, which has our basic themes here. That's a recent ad. Conversation from CBC. What are you, Bob? Am I supposed to call you a priest, a host, a political figure, or are you a marginal impersonator? I'm a mixed corporate media environment. Brent Bambury, conversation with Bob Dawes and Breaking the Wave, April 30th. Prepare me for future employment. Okay, that's first ad. Then we do this. Today, the audience is the elusive opiate of the people. Bob Dobbs, enamored of Prince Turner's taxes, June 4th, 1953. You ever heard of Prince Turner's taxes?
No.
Gloria Turner taxes?
No.
Miss TNT in New York?
Well, yes. First
he's a crazy guy in Europe, maybe the world, the wealthiest guy.
Yeah, he was.
So what do we got?
Mike, are you with us?
Yeah.
Well...
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. No, the audience is the elusive opiate of the people. You see how no other.
So this is consecutively running in the weekly called I that I told you to go.
Yeah, you did. Somebody said that was in a paper, some stuff in the Sun or something?
No.
It's a separate thing. Okay, and there's the
yeah. It's run by the Star.
Oh, that's what I meant. Oh, there we are.
We should call Nelson and tell him to look at us.
Yeah, he's not in there.
He's not in there.
So we're telling actual fact truth here that Nelson is your producer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he owns that building. It's all been
But he also owns the Star.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Nelson's behind Bob.
Well,
Bob's
behind
him. He works for me.
Publishing. Do you know Harlequin?
Yes.
Yeah. They're probably the largest publisher in the world.
Harlequin Romance.
Yeah, they do a lot better in Eastern Europe these days. McSalgam Corporation.
So this guy, does he own Dub or does he own?
No,
produce. He just produced the record.
Yeah.
And he works for me. He's my butler.
He is.
The secret council. He proves that I'm the secret council team guy. The wealth. I mean, these guys are going to succeed the Reichmans. They didn't make the
you
same
guys
mistake.
Go on.
Okay, then dig this. This is that was 2 weeks ago, and then we have this.
Bob. Oh, praise him! This is beyond anything.
That's beyond Manichean satire.
Look at this. The theater and book worlds are merely mirrors. The pop and television worlds are merely echoes for my Mystery Media and Mega Micro Project achieves Manichean tactility.
And that's why nobody's buying the record. Right?
Yeah.
People are so confused and astounded by these ads.
Are they buying or are they not paying?
They're not buying because they don't know. We're confusing a lot.
Yeah, they
don't
know whether we're corporate or alternative. They don't know, which is our point, right? So look at this. We don't need to make any money on this thing. We're going to advertise this art form. Everything is art.
I wouldn't mind selling a few copies.
But dig the memo. Yeah, he wouldn't mind. Look, memo to Kim Philby, September 17, 1982.
Oh, Kim Philby, one of the
British intelligence, triple agent.
Right.
The myth is that he defected, but he's working for Prince Charles, who the oligarchy was pre-20th century, so they had to infiltrate both the capitalists and the communists. So they're triple agents. That's what Kim Philby was. So that's we're very proud of these statements.
I'm so glad you insisted I meet Bob. I am absolutely
okay. So you guys are gonna cover your own bill.
Already decided. Okay. Yeah. Huh?
You guys can cover your own bill.
Yeah.
And I'll cover it for me and Bob.
Okay. That's a fair deal.
And then for a church document, a fantastic interview with me called "Entertainment Sucks." So you could.
Is it as good as the one I did, or better?
Oh, it's better, Jerry.
If you read the one, I FedExed that one to him like 2 years ago.
Absolutely insane.
Did you ever read that one?
No.
Anyway,
you know why I didn't read it?
You had the most perfect interview.
You know why I didn't read it?
2 years ago.
Because I was waiting for the moment.
Yeah.
See, now that interview will be used.
It's relevant.
But I have to meet the people live in concert.
Yeah. Right.
That's when I write about them. Because it's not like a normal magazine where I could just do a story on Bob, but it doesn't relate to the region that I'm talking about, you know, or that I've actually gone to and met somebody in person.
Right.
So now it makes sense.
Yeah.
But I keep that information and then I pull it.
So I'll put these in a bag.
If I still have it, and I'm sure I do.
Let's see.
I'm sure.
This one's probably more relevant anyway, because that one was older.
Yeah, this is a profound interview.
I'll tell you something, guys. McGill University is here, right?
No, that's in Montreal.
Yes.
But is Marshall McLuhan from here?
Oh, yeah. This is.
He didn't teach at McGill.
Oh, I thought
he taught at the U of T.
I thought he taught at McGill.
University of Toronto.
No. He and Innes, Harold Innes, University of Toronto.
I will one of the great, most brilliant guys.
Yeah, that's
the chief archivist right here.
No, I'm executive manager of think tank operations for the Marshall McLuhan Center. That's another thing that Nelson and I run.
You actually work there?
We work with Mrs. McLuhan. Well, I do the. We write a column in Ad News Magazine, which is a Canadian advertising trade thing. And we have a column called the McLuhan Dialogues where this Toronto journalist asks Nelson questions, and he calls me up at headquarters, and I give him the answer, and then Nelson types it up, and we print it out. And we offered a collection of the first year of dialogues, like about 44 weeks of short columns, and for free, for the first 50 callers, we got calls from Time Magazine, all the major corporations in Toronto and the States within 4 hours who wanted those things. They're all reading this little obscure trade journal with my stuff in it, with Nelson as the front man. But Nelson is the president of the Marshall McLuhan Center,
Marshall McLuhan Center on Global Communications.
I'm executive manager of Think Tank Operations. I should give you my card. I don't know how we'll connect later, but I have a card to prove it. And we know McLuhan. I mean, we have the biggest McLuhan archives outside of the CIA and the National Archives in Ottawa. The CIA has always used his stuff.
Yeah.
Good evening.
Hi.
Can I bring you a drink for dinner? Bob, you drink,
Bob? Mm. I've seen him do it.
Water.
Water?
Yeah. Ice.
I'm not drinking. Who's this?
They're not drinking, so I'll have tomato juice.
Tomato juice?
Yeah.
So I've never seen the dinner menu here. Boy, it's really pricey.
You take this.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Okay,
nice. Everything goes under $10, so
no problem.
For dinner?
He's already opened it.
So I don't know.
Where did you put it? I'll just show you.
Wow.
You haven't seen
it.
Huh?
I'm getting monks.
Yeah, I was just saying.
First of all,
I never come here at dinner. It was a lot cheaper when I came here for lunch. Or,
well,
does your
credit card actually work? Is it for show? Is it for show? Because if it does work, We're gonna go for that. The best. Mediterranean seafood. What is AL about?
Paella?
That's AOL.
How do you spell that? Kind of like a mixture of all kinds of seafoods and a tomato sauce.
Ooh. Little close, spicy. Jerry. Close.
It is.
Yeah.
Over rice or something, right?
Yeah, it can be.
Where's the word? How's it spelled? Where do you see that?
Right there.
Yeah, that's the stuff that Terrence McKenna takes.
Oh, you know Terrence McKenna.
Oh, yeah. Garrett, ever since he fucking took some of my diesel water, he had a trip where he thought he was in the Amazon. Oh, right, and he thought it was peyote and psilocybin.
Spanish.
And he's been confused ever since.
Of
course, the pinks are hard to get them out there. The article in Esquire magazine, because he took some of my diesel water, purified water, and thought he went to the center of the earth, beyond the roots and boulders. That is that kind of confusion with the pink status in New York. Just waste a ride so they can market it, spread it around, and keep people confused even more.
It's difficult.
It's something that I've had to put up with for, you know, over 500 years. I've had enough.
Yeah.
We're going to lock down this Bob rule
immediately.
So, Bob, where'd you grow up?
Well,
in this
country. Well, I was born in 1922 in Paris.
Really?
Yeah. I'm 70 years old. I turned 70 in February. February 2nd.
I knew you were an Aquarius.
Didn't I tell you your name?
Aquarius. Just because it doesn't mean that if I was born that day that I'm influenced by that point. So don't be thrown by that. You know what I mean? It takes all signs just to lock me down, to have me incarnated, right? So, but
you're too confused by the constellations.
No. To go with the Aquarius sign leads you off to the accurate perception that Gemini is closer. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to help you. Don't go by the date. But so February 2nd.
So 1922.
Yeah. So I just turned 70. And
there's two here. Do you know, remember this guy on Key West? Did you read you didn't read the Key West issue, but there's a guy down on Key West.
The 22 guy?
Yeah.
The Love 22 candidate?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know him. Yeah. He's always sending me these little dollar bills, the $22 bill thing. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Did you figure out how to put it together and stuff?
Did I figure it out?
Yeah.
He got that for me. I mean, the 22 is a very resonant number in the 20th century because fascism started. Oh, you okay, Mike? Yeah. So
no, I'm a little concerned.
Yeah. 1922 is when the Rockefellers locked down fascism through Mussolini. He moved into Italy, into Rome in 1922, and he set up officially the fascist structure was 22 departments. Now, if you notice, the CIA does heavy, the Rockefeller-influenced CIA does major blood money transactions on the 22nd. The most well-known one is November 22nd, right? 1963. They nailed Allende, president of Chile in 73. To get him, they had to get rid of his head of security. And they killed him on October 22nd. And there was a writer for Covert Action Information Bulletin who wrote about the 22nd movement in the April 1981 issue, if you want to look it up. They have it documented, the significance of the number 22. But that's the Rockefeller World Government faction, which was set up in 1918 to 1922 period. So you'll see that the number 22 in all Big Brother operations. Now, why? What did you? So, this guy, I
love 22. I was asking about.
Yeah, but this guy, because that is a psychic archetype in the 20th century. Then, if one pays attention to number 22, you'll see it show up a lot in news items,
mm-hmm.
especially in the 80s when the Rockefellers were having their crisis and were going down. Then they became more visible collectively, psychically. So you could see 22 in the news all the time. And that happened all the way through the 80s. And I use that paradigm on my radio show. But now it's shifted to 14.
That's my birthday. Yeah.
You're a 14 guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good because it's it has the 4, which is the nature of metaphor, ratio, to A is to B, C is to D. It's a 2-2 structure. But with 1 in front of it, you lock down Bob rule. So then you have a metaphorical rule, a mythic government, which induces slack. And it's basically the Lemurian vibe, whereas 22 is the Atlantean vibe, the Atlantic Ocean, the European civilization. So you read William Irwin Thompson, he talks about Pacific shift, right? So we're moving into a 14 vibe, the Pacific Rim area, California, Vancouver, Japan, and Micronesia, Indonesia, Philippines. So you're seeing 14 show up a lot more over the last couple of years. it began with the murder of 14 women in Montreal in December 89. Remember, you heard of the massacre? The guy, the student, killed 14 women?
Engineering students?
I don't remember this.
He became Mark a big... Lapine. Mark Lapine. He murdered 14 women in school. And I would say that was the last gasp of the 22 faction, the patriarchal 22 faction. And but the he didn't succeed in killing 22 women. The 14 was there to show the lack of success of the operation. So he only killed 14. So these women, being the feminine Lemurian principle, were sacrificial lambs to the situation. But when you realize you don't have one life, then you know you reincarnate, you sacrifice yourself for these major paradigm shifts. You know, so these women are heroes in the church, and they don't mind being shot. You know, because you have to lock down this 14 vibe.
So when were you? How many times were you sacrificed?
Not many, because I organized the sacrificial situation.
But you did go up.
No. You see, I'm the incarnation of the physical plane. I mean, when I have mystical experiences and go to the Godhead, I just see myself. You know, a mirror, you just see your own head at the Godhead. Yes. Toronto.
I think that broke you.
So I've never had to... you see, I've had the same life in all my lives. I've had over 1,700 past lives, and I'm going to have another 1,500 future lives. But the interesting thing is, I don't have different... I look different, but it's the same personality in every life. So...
Oh, no!
You know what I mean? It's the same guy, you know? And,
Still too bad for history.
Oh, my God!
So...
I love Bob. Go on.
So when
I have a camera, by the way?
When I have
to... Bob for the life of the camera. Sorry,
yeah. When
we'll just get this shot of like Toronto.
The Toronto Star.
I know that. It's sort of like
it'll go right
ghost.
Through him. Yeah, exactly.
It's sort of like ghost. But what if I? Oh, thank you. That's good.
Yeah, we need that. Toronto.
Oh, they're going to stop the moving now. So
Toronto.
Toronto. To run to.
So, there it is. Look at the building.
That's the
needle.
Oh, I thought that's where we were.
That's Solar Theater.
So what were you doing before the theater? I mean, that wasn't here always.
Yeah, that's in our press release.
How did you do it before?
Okay, you asked me something about incarnation.
Yeah, I'll be back there later.
The what?
What were you doing before the needle came?
Well, see, I say in that statement in the ad, put down there, I'm a mixed corporate media environment. So I've always been the logos, the man-made version. In other words, speech was one of the first technologies. And then you had, in general, you had the early tools and fire, but then writing, first hieroglyphics, then the phonetic alphabet, major communication systems, which were man-made versions, echoes of the original logos, which is the matrix that keeps everything repeating and looking similar. You know what I mean? The order, the natural law. So I've always been the logos, the figure for the ground of the man-made logos, which is whatever technological environment was the main basis of social organization. So you're right. I was this now, but I've been other media before.
Like, which other media?
All media, any medium that becomes environmental. So I was the printing press. I was the newspaper environment. I was the movie environment, the telegraph environment.
You were the first telephone.
Yes. Son of Ed. Ed is son. Edison.
Ed is son.
And Bell.
Toronto.
Graham Bell, Nova Scotia. Yeah. Nova Scotia is where we...
rediscovered. Was it in Nova Scotia when that happened?
When it was rediscovered? New Scotland?
The first phone call was from Nova Scotia to...
Graham Bell, yeah.
I don't know where it
was. It was Brunswick?
It was in Cape Breton.
Right.
That's where Graham Bell did, but the Marconi set up the first wireless communication from Sydney, Nova Scotia. Ooh, getting, feeling it? Yeah. Getting that Bardo release, you know? But I'd have to go back about the death question, because I work on the Bardos. When I die, my job is to sort of mainly run the archives of the Akashic Records, where everybody, when you die, you go to the center of your own consciousness. And you see all your lives like a plate. You go to the center, and you see all your lives that you had in the past and will have in the future, like little ants going around the rim of the plate. And you sit there, and no reincarnation guru or Hindu philosophy tells you this. That when you look there, and you see this life and that life, this life, that life. Then you decide which one you want to live. And once you live it, you then can relive it in another time frame and do it again. So every life you've had is still going, and you can do it again.
Let's order dinner, or should I come back?
Oh, well,
we're ready to order?
Well, okay. What, you guys ready to order yet?
Sure.
You want to order one?
What should I get, George?
Well, are we not ready to do that?
Come back. Yeah. Come back in 5 minutes when you guys are ready.
Yeah, we're making a key point here.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy gets the point. Okay. The point is that all your other lives are going on. This life, you will be able to relive this meeting with me in this life, in this context.
Because it's continuous.
Right, and it's mutable. You can change it. You can relive it in another dimension. Relive it and have a better or a worse situation happen than what's going to happen tonight. Right. So, it takes a fast mind, which is the clue to Gemini. Gemini is a very fast mind. You have to have a Gemini ability on the astral plane to organize and archive all the people's perceptions of all their lives. And that's my role. I'm a liaison between each soul and all their lives. So I do a lot of guidance in reincarnation direction. So I rest my case.
I hear it. Yeah. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to spend 3 minutes walking around so I can see this view.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Walk that way.
Why?
You suggest that?
Yeah.
Why, you get sick? By the way?
So where do you guys live in New York? What part?
In New York?
New York City?
That's an irrelevant question. We don't live in New York. We live on the road.
Is that right? Always on the road?
Yeah. I've lived on the road for 6.5 years.
But doesn't Monk have an address?
Yeah, it's a box.
In Manhattan?
Yeah, it's a box in Manhattan.
But you don't have an apartment there?
No. No, I live in a motorhome. And so I park, usually when I'm in New York, I park on the 40th. I think I park on Pier 13.
Yeah.
Sometimes Pier 40. And I park in the East Village, and I park in the NYU area.
Yeah.
I have a lot of good parking spots. Some are elevated. A few are elevated up to, like, if you're on the pier side, you can elevate up to the 3 or 4 floors. Say,
yeah.
Trucks.
Yeah.
Up. Otherwise, I wouldn't ever lay claim to living in New York City.
Right.
As much as I live... By virtue that I live on the roads, and all roads lead to New York,
yeah.
Then I live in New York.
That's the gravity. The gravity, goes towards that.
And everything pulls
yeah.
in that direction.
Yeah.
Just coming right. back for your mail.
I don't come back for my mail.
But that...
They just send it to me.
But Jim is not in the home with you, in the mobile home.
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes I shove him out the door.
So he lives there, too?
Yeah, sometimes he lives there, too.
He doesn't have another place.
He's homeless. He's very, very homeless. He was homeless when I met him, and now he's even more homeless.
Yeah. And he has, what would you say there? He is, he's exploited his homelessness.
He's exploited it to its ultimate exploitation. And
he's found the service in it, not
yeah,
the disservice.
Yeah, yeah, because there's many ways you can find the service in what you do.
Yeah.
So yeah. No one should feel hopeless.
Or disadvantaged.
Never. Never. And I particularly think that... So you're like the traffic cop in between...
Bardos. On the Bardo. But it's a lot more complex than the Tibetan Book of the Dead or the Egyptian Book of the Dead have laid out. Because they kind of emphasize going to the clear white light and then bouncing back in again and ending in a bliss state, which is a Gnostic bias that sort of denies the power of this world. So they try to get you to get out of the wheel of reincarnation. But Bob's effort through his prayer of man-made environments, which are echoes of divine thunder, is to show the value of this dimension, of this world. So that
the longer, the better.
Yeah. And so I celebrate the reincarnation into the world of matter, even though matter is going to be changing.
Right. Now, what about those who, in essence, just came in?
I heard that how you directed new batches.
Yeah, to be rerouted back here?
Yeah, well, but it never comes. It's fresh.
Oh, are you saying the first soul? New soul.
New soul.
Yeah, for the first time.
Yeah,
where does new ones come from?
Yeah, well, we know where they come from.
Where do they come from?
They come from other places in Europe. Out there.
Yeah, see, new souls are, we don't know where they're coming from. Like, we haven't found God yet on all dimensions. We know we're going to find him because we know our future lives. But we haven't locked it down yet, what God is. But, it's going to get more confusing as we, as the artificial intelligence can lock down souls, and people can physically.
Two more times.
Yeah. If you lock down souls into computers, then the astral plane is now on this plane, and so it offsets the physical plane. So where's the physical plane going to go? So it's really getting confusing for new souls because we've extended the astral plane to electric environments.
It's confusing because they can't find which.
Which is the more matter, or which is less matter?
That's confusing. Yeah. Because when I came in, there was such a demand. There was a waiting list just to get on this one.
Right. Well, that's because they knew I would lock down Bob Rule in this lifetime. So everybody wants to be here for it. And that's why we've had the most people that ever lived in the history of man.
It was locked down
February 88.
In February 88.
Yeah, that's when the Exodus landed and gave me the intergalactic support. But on our chart, you find it cold, you might want to put. Find it chilly? Is that the window?
No, it's not cold. It's a breeze coming out of
the air out of my It's the air conditioner.
Sort of icy.
Yeah. It's the north.
Why the match?
Yeah. The concepts are the warmth within the cold medium.
I'm reaching.
Yeah. Well, man's reaching must exceed his grasp. Byron, almost 200 years ago, he said that. But
88.
February 2nd, 88. Well, we had an election on the station, on the radio station. But that's irrelevant. Let's deal with this issue of
new soul.
That's very important because never has so many people lived on the planet as in this century. There's never been 4 or 5 billion souls at one time.
There's a max point too at this level, at this stratum. There's a maximum.
Well, if you don't, you would have to think that if you don't agree with Lyndon LaRouche, who says there's no limits to growth. Have you studied Lyndon LaRouche?
I don't agree.
I know.
Oh.
Yeah. You wouldn't agree, but you have to give everybody who thinks is on the right track with some reality, because every thought is real.
So you have to stick in somewhere.
Yes. You have to account for his powerful thinking. And so you shouldn't disagree or agree with him. You should understand what he's saying, but you don't have to become it. And that's what I call metaphysical promiscuity. You know, you learn to ventriloquize all kinds of thought patterns. That's how you get slapped. And you can communicate with anybody.
That's true. But that's very Gemini.
See?
Adaptability.
So if there's 5 billion souls on the planet now, and how many were there 200 years ago?
No, not many.
So
not compared to
that. Where did these extra 2 billion souls come from?
They generated.
There's generation, but there's about 10 billion souls that ever existed. You know what I mean? And of course, they'll be new, but let's say that's a majority number, 10 billion. So half of them wanted to be here for lockdown Bob Rule. So that's why everybody's doing this.
And that's for the next couple hundred?
It's from 1990, 2020. Then after that, the only time once did I ever say what happens after 2020. And I summed it up by saying that's when Bob does battle with the church. So I lock down Bob Rule, the church celebrates, and then there's a problem, right? After that. So I don't want to dwell on that point, because that's after 2020.
Bob has to kill us all. So well.
The church, they won't understand their role anymore, because we will have won, you know? And then they'll be arguing, Bob, it's boring.
If the church wins the battle, if the battle for good is won, then who's good then?
Yeah, and that's where the all hell the confusion breaks out, and I'll be forced to have to go to kind of a negative level with them, you know, a conflictual situation. But it won't take away my slack, because I'll have locked that down by 2020, right?
So but it's sacrificial.
Yeah. You could say we're going to start over again.
7 billion.
What?
7 billion sacrifice. Yeah. But don't you, like, shove them David Spengler said that...
No, that's William Irwin Thompson's friend. Have you read Thompson? William Irwin Thompson?
No, but anyhow...
He raves about Spengler all the time.
He said he would shove him through. Shove him through at that juncture. Shove him through to that next notch.
Yeah, which is an interval.
And most of them wouldn't even know that they had...
That's right.
Gone.
See, that's...
They would still be there.
That's why the conflict after 2020...
They would actually, like, as we're talking...
Yeah.
They'd miss it.
Yeah, that's right. See, that's why after 2020 the conflict will be so much fun, because... They'll be doing exactly what you're saying. They'll be conflicting and not aware of it, because the confusion is beyond new souls' capacity to perceptualize, to incorporate it as a filter. It's all media are filters.
Well, do you think longevity is going to have an effect upon
but
new
that's,
soul
that's
thing?
Part
yeah,
of it.
That's part of the confusion.
They'll think that that's longevity.
Yeah, when we have heaven on earth, where's the old earth limitation going to go? So there's always the yin-yang flip. So when the scientists develop the ability to have immortality here, then...
Which is how far away? 20 years?
Say 30, 40 years. By 2020. I can do that now.
He's mortal. He's really only Bob when he's electric, but he's electrifying himself as we speak.
But when does he give?
That's
when does he give birth?
Very good, Jerry. Yeah. Jerry's learning. it's important to have the electric environment going around Bob to when he's performing.
When does Bob give birth?
Not yet.
But when?
That's top secret, because that solves the problem of what is the new matter.
Who's father, mother?
Yeah. The inside just rolling through Jim's chakras.
It's not inside. It's slack. I'm just wallowing in slacks or whatever it is.
I'll be myself.
In the glow,
be
glowing in the box.
So that's what we're waiting for. That really was the second
the laughter.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
Bob
the
like
involuted, mirroristic echo.
What?
Yeah. It's no ordinary Bob. You'll remember this guy someday.
Yep, you'll hear about
midwives?
It. Midwives?
How many midwives?
No, there's the second thing. See that island? I was explaining
okay.
to Jim. Oh, we better read
okay,
we'll get
to down to the earth again.
Yeah.
Mortality.
Food. Limits to growth.
Limits to growth. Still have to eat.
Still have to eat.
Yeah.
Oh, the salami steak.
Oh, jeez.
Where is that? Where is that?
You could still have it.
Where's the salami steak?
Second top?
That's a good one. Kind of question for you. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a tech one.
What's this thing called? Now, this is wrong compared to what it means here. Salsa verde is the cuisine sauce, but in this particular what'd you order, Jerry?
It's a monk dish, non-meat style.
What about chicken with lobster?
It's grilled with white wine.
Really decadent.
And it's a lot of herbs.
Is that decadent?
Is there a sauce?
No, I thought you didn't really
not really a sauce.
This has a sauce.
And paella?
No, I eat anything.
Yeah. I knew you did.
Yeah. We just spent a week at Algonquin Park. Jeez, the buffets, the endless variety of food was amazing. Yeah, we better hold that.
Bob, what do you get?
Look at this monkfish. Are you dwelling on that or just ignoring it?
I saw the monkfish, and it was the first thing I saw. And
I noticed it.
I have to get it. One of us has to get it. And unless Bob wants to experience that fish.
Okay.
Maybe Bob gets the Mediterranean seafood and then
I'm
he can share
it.
No, I'm getting the chicken with lobster.
Bob's got to have some chicken.
I'm from Nova Scotia. Yeah. Temporarily.
The chicken and the lobster?
Yeah. All right? Mm-hmm. You guys have any soup or anything before?
Okay, let's have a soup. We'll have one soup and we'll split it. We won't have a soup. Bob, do you want to have a soup?
What kind of do you have?
This gazpacho, fishman soup, garlic soup.
Is there a wind in there?
And mushroom soup.
It's probably just the AC.
Is it a breeze?
You can see it.
No soup. No soup.
Oh. It's not the breeze because it's moving.
No.
Rolls.
Butter?
Wait, it's butter. It is a
broth.
A fish stock with shrimp, scallops, mussels.
This is a city.
Oh, yeah.
You've never been here before.
First time I've had a soup. They wouldn't let me cross until today.
What was the problem?
Monkfish.
If you have one drug,
You
mean you tried before?
Does that come over rice?
Yeah, so you didn't try again, and now it's sort of forgotten?
Yeah.
Did they grill you a bit?
Yeah, but for different reasons. They interrogated us.
Really?
Yeah, it was really strange.
In one of their little anal rooms.
What's that?
One of their little anal rooms.
The customs.
They do the...
you guys got interrogated.
With the condom.
Finger up the butt. No.
Well, metaphorically speaking, yes.
Yeah, he was feeling us up for bond.
Yeah.
No, it was actually... I don't know why they gave us such a hard time.
No, I know why.
Because we didn't have
passports. That's where we are.
No.
You don't need a passport to Canada.
Well, we said we were here on business.
But they would let other people through, too. I know, it's just...
It's our... Tourists don't know. As soon as they think you're going to make a dollar in Canada, they won't come. That's why you can't do that.
So, when do you let your hair down?
On the radio, every 2 weeks, when I did my show.
That's when I sort of let the slack flow, and we created new interpretations and new energizations of slack. And we only did that once every 2 weeks. The rest of the time, I'm so fucking busy. You know, with the Tegel Council of 10 Global Theater, Media Ecological Management, and AirSat, any environments, it's Torstar all the way, you know. It's just impossible.
No, you didn't mean that, did you? Would
yes.
Let his hair down?
Yeah.
Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
Oh.
Not very much. And now I'm not even on the radio anymore.
Oh.
Because my butler, Tom Touche.
Tom Touche. How do you spell his name?
T-O-U-C-H-E with a Q.
Okay.
Right.
He doesn't mind having his name in print, does he, Tom Touche?
No. He was my butler, and he's caused all kinds of problems for me. As a matter of fact, I think he's organized Jerry and Nelson to release the CD. It was not authorized by me. And I'm very suspicious of what Jerry and Tom are going to do with the profits. So,
but I heard you're not selling it through your ads.
No. So, but...
Look,
it's
a Ross...
It's
a Ross Perot. You cannot be successful commercially if you're trying to make money. So we want everybody to know we're selling nothing. A lot of people buy it as a result of that. It's empathy, you know? So which person...
Is this the truth?
Yeah.
Honest to God, it's truth?
Everything is at least...
this is going to happen? It's for job entertainment.
We might sell something.
But that's not the
very likely that we might sell something. No, what's important is the advertising.
Yeah.
The content of the CD is irrelevant. And
the liner
the CD
notes.
Itself is irrelevant. The liner
is there
notes
anything,
are more
important. Is there anything on the CD?
No. Yes, 74 minutes of good entertainment.
No, beautiful music.
Beautiful music.
Yeah, no,
it's beautiful. Like it's in audible. The tape has music.
We can put it on there.
Let's hear it. Yeah. Can you hear it at dinner?
Okay, let me...
Oh, no, but we're not.
Let's take
a hear what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Ready? Okay, you got the pause button on, buddy. Me?
No, that's record.
It's going.
It's going.
It goes down for pause.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
You're telling me, Bob,
yeah.
that you're telling me this is important stuff, that you were in Dallas, Texas.
In the late 70s.
And in a way like Jack Kerouac meeting Neil Cassidy.
Yeah.
Mr. Smith met you and saw you as sort of the noble savage of the era, and said,
"Unfortunately,
I'm going to make a cosmology out of this guy and base it on a cartoon."
He didn't know that. No. He did, but he didn't know. He didn't know the whole situation because he had access to my office sometimes.
You had an office?
Yeah, in Dallas. It was solar theater government. It was very important. I wasn't chairman of the council then. I was one of the 40 people managing the planet, but I did not have seniority, the ultimate seniority then.
Uh-huh.
But I had to work out of Dallas because, you know, the Kennedy assassination, much power shifted to Dallas, right?
Right.
And so in the 70s, I was in Dallas a lot. And staying in Philo, these two local yokels met me once in some bar or someplace, I don't know. And I was with some people from the DIA, not the CIA. The DIA is way more powerful than the CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency. And as a joke, they allowed me to humor these guys, and they came to our table in the bar. And after a while, the other guys got bored, but they stuck with me. So we went home, and I gave my phone number. They call up. Then they come down to see the corporate headquarters, you know, like a Torstar building in Dallas. And it's interesting to find Dallas is similar to Toronto. It is, in mentality, too. And so they come and they hang around. This is in 1978, 1979. And eventually he gets
access to some of my files and see them. Now, I didn't know this, but he started stealing some of the files. And it was that, when he took that stuff home and started reading it, that's when he went nuts. Because he got such intellectual slack from the percepts in the literature that he and Philo sort of a, what do you call it, like a womb identification with the womb. He thought that he had a very personal relationship with me as a result of the power of this literature. So he thought that I arrived in 1953, that I channeled, that I worked with Philo Drummond, and the whole thing that's laid out in the Book of Type Genius, he hallucinated that. And Philo, being a good friend, trying to be empathetic with Doug, wanted to sort of keep his friendship with Reverend Ivers Stang, who wasn't staying then, but he kind of went along with it. But it evoked a talent in Philo for ranting just to be friends with Doug, who was dealing with this information. So that's what you... So they used to get in their car and drive around Dallas and tape these rants, and that's what you hear on the tapes. But when I left in 82, and that's the key point of that date, September 17th, 82, in our ad, that was when, if you study Dr. Beter, when the Bolsheviks, who took over the Pentagon in the late 70s, tried to nuke the white Christian faction that Gorbachev came out of in Russia. They were going to nuke Russia from, and they were Bolsheviks, they were going to nuke Russia from the Pentagon. But as a result of Dr. Beter's releasing of that information in Washington and some other things that I did, it didn't happen. So as a result of that, the nuclear war scenario was really diminished. So I came to Toronto after that. And as a result of me leaving in 82, Stang really had a problem because, you know, it's fun to be around me, but I wasn't there anymore. So he took the files. He took the picture of my father, which I can show you in a few minutes. Took the picture of my father and claimed that was the bobhead, what I looked like. That image, the bobhead, is my father, not me. And he took that and he got this nut at,
Mavridis.
No, it's not Simon Schuster, the first people.
Oh, McGraw-Hill.
McGraw-Hill, right. He got McGraw-Hill, some guy there, published the Book of the Subgenius in late 83.
Yeah, and then he died.
He died a few years. Tim, his name was. He died a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But, in Three Fisted Tales of Bob, he talks about that.
Right.
And Stang makes him a saint. But it's a saint for Stang's era, reality, because as a result of that book coming out and being reviewed in People magazine, all these people started writing it. So by early 84, he had to explain my absence. I wasn't there anymore. I was here in Toronto, undercover. So what does he do? He sets up an assassination on January 21st in 84. Remember the assassination in San Francisco performance thing they did?
I wasn't around then.
Well, it's in the Arise video. They show the assassination of me, a dummy me.
Uh-huh.
And now why am I... It's been a problem for him ever since to sort of account for Bob's absence. But he basically just took my files. But the reason I give so much slack on my radio show is that he didn't have all the files. He did not have the McLuhan knowledge, which was very special in the Secret Council of Ten's archive. He had the May Brassel, the Rouge, Cosmic Awareness, the other holy offices. He had that stuff, and he did a play on that in his book. But, I mean, a satire in a certain way.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't mind him having the slack to make a living out of that. But for the real lockdown barbell situation, the real information has to come out. So I welcome Tom Touche taping me and getting Jerry to distribute the CD, because the real knowledge, like that memo, is what's going to be released, and people will get a lot more staying power with the church dogma than anything they get from Stang's book.
So you think it's more satire from Doug and more truth from you?
Yeah.
Well, it's pure satire from Stang.
Yeah.
He's created this whole flock of kids, and all they're doing is, you know, sprouting off the dumb slogans of Subgenius.
And becomes a one-note joke.
Yeah, and there's no real content there. There's just this cartoon animated thing.
He's getting complaints from them now. They don't think Stang is keeping the joke alive.
We're getting all these letters from, you know, diehard Subgeniuses. And, you know, all they have is complaints about the Dallas church. You know, how they're not keeping up to date and they're not producing any new material. They haven't done anything with... I mean, for a lot of people, maybe that Church of the Subgenius stuff was the first kind of subversive material that...
I call
that,
it the Old Testament. It's
that,
the Old Testament.
That kind of shook them out of their little reality and put them somewhere else, you know?
But it has no staying power and no...
And the promise
no satire.
Threat of the exit's landing and all that has a lot of relevance for a lot of people.
Yeah, like he has...
Because that's a very large psychic energy that the exits are...
I can't have my spoon. Can I have my spoon?
Spoon?
I have spoons.
Oh, okay.
Big spoon.
He has it down.
Spoon bin.
He has it down that the exits will land on July 5th, 1998. Okay? Now, my father died July 5th, 1976. Why did he pick a year, 22 years later, after my father's death? July 5th, 1976, 22 years later, July 5th, 1998. He calls that the appointed time for the exits to land. The 22 is important. That comes out of a subconscious, because the effect of 22 was powerful in the late 70s when he composed that scenario. And he doesn't know that under electric conditions, we live at least 200 years every 12 months. 200 years of experience compared to any other century. All right? So if you're living 200 years, and you map out...
200 years of experience every what?
12 months. Or an annum. But every 12 months. And if you're living like that, if you set a date for July 5th, 1998, in 1983 when the book's published, that point of 1998 would arrive within 6 months. You know what I mean? In real electric terms. Mm-hmm. So his calculations were way off, and they really were going to land in February 88. And they landed in 88. They helped me win in lockdown the chairmanship of Sea Council 10. We had the election.
It was all over the newspapers. It was front page everywhere, and everyone went, oh, haha, more front page UFOs.
More Bob jokes because he runs the Toronto Star, and they think I, you know, because I own the Toronto Star, I can stick with stuff
in there. It was the Mongolian landing. Do you remember the TASS news agency reports all the landings in 88?
In October, on Lenin's birthday, October 9th, 89. Remember TASS came out and said, we have
front
a true
page all over
UFO landing? That was in October 89.
They said it landed in some weird part of Russia. That was,
you remember that, Mike?
It was such big stories.
Yeah. There's a real story, and that was the beginning of the trickle-down effect, that they had landed in 88. And now the crop circle thing started happening in 89 and 90.
I remember those.
Yeah, and they're still happening. And I predicted them. I predicted that one would in late 90 or 89. I can't remember. It was probably late 89. I predicted that there would be a crop circle in Nova Scotia by April 90. And sure enough, the end of April, local newspaper article here has a picture and names the place, Fort Lawrence, Nova Scotia. There it was. Now, that's pretty amazing that I'm predicting where these crop circles are.
Bob, before it gets too dark, actually, give me 5 minutes. I'll come back. I'm using my three. I want you to point out some major highlights here in 2 Run 2. Okay?
Okay, yeah.
All right?
2 Run 2.
Okay, I want him to do that because, you know, we are a travel magazine. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that what you guys are? You're in the travel market? Is that what they feed your...
No.
In the industry?
That's where they put them in the...
The travel industry, you recognize you?
Absolutely.
The tourist industry. We are a travel magazine.
Well, that's where you find it at Kohl's.
Really?
In the travel section?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I've only noticed it.
Where would it usually be?
I have no idea. I've never seen it.
They always hide it. Yeah. It's always hidden behind some other books. It's not really prominent in most of the stores.
I've only noticed it in New Age stores.
Yeah. Maybe New Age. It's either New Age, gay travel, or very weird offbeat sections. One of the four.
So in Kohl's, they put it in the travel?
Yeah. Sell the holidays.
So, back to...
Williams, yeah. Spangler.
No.
Okay.
Post-Spangler.
Yeah.
Spangler was just a signpost. The midwives.
Oh, I want to tell you about the midwives.
The midwives is what I really was positive. I mean, want to know more about. The midwives.
Okay, that island there?
Which is an island.
You see that stretch of green?
Yeah, isn't that like...
No, that's... It's an island.
It's an island.
It's not connected there or at the other end.
Oh.
So it's called Toronto Island, right, Jerry?
Down there now.
It's over there now. It'll be over here later. You bring up midwives. The only controversy that Connie ever got into while working in Toronto was with a midwife over there. And they had a baby over there. So Carolyn told them not to do it on the island. I think she said do it with a doctor or immediate access to hospitals. And as a result of the faulty birth, they didn't get the kid to the hospital in time because they were stuck on the island here. And so Connie had to testify in court over this midwife problem. And it worked out okay. But
made the midwives have a hard time for a couple of years, but now they've been made legitimate here in Toronto, in Ontario.
But what about, like, in 2020, when self-procreated birth comes...
What's the role of midwives?
Yeah, okay, what's for the midwives and where did they come from? Because that's a special skill.
Yeah.
Because it's coming from a... from what I understand, it's coming out of the throat. So it's no more cesarean. It's like...
Well, how do we sort of approach this? When Connie's age... Yeah, is this chicken lobster?
Chicken lobster. Sorry about that. Can you guys, you know how to take stuff out of this
lobster?
Well, it's already open. Okay. It's split in half.
Yeah, okay, good. I don't know how to use my fingers in that manner. I'm just lazy. I was hoping to see a good old book.
But cut my knee.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. So the... is your plate hot? Jeez, they make this really hot. It's ridiculous. It's really hot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, Connie... Well, there's new technology she's going to release in public that'll affect the aging process.
And the birthing. Who's Connie?
My wife.
Bob and Connie?
Yeah.
Bob and Connie.
And she's the doctor at the doctor's... Jim would probably understand that more. We'll go back. Let's hold off on the midway until he comes back so that he can interact with it.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah. What is it about midwives?
What is it about midwives?
Yeah.
Back in 1950, the most powerful image of my birth was that the only reason that anyone would come, new souls would come here, would be to take part in a midwife training for births that came out of the throat. That's what I was asking.
Births that came out of the throat?
Came out of the throat. Like new births that came out of the throat. And from hermaphrodites, too, self-procreating.
Yeah.
So I'm on the lookout for hermaphrodites who are procreating who give birth out of the throat.
That is possible because...
So that's, and I'm a midwife, so for that occasion.
See, but there's what I call an anthropomorphic bias in your search. Anthropomorphic being the way we look now. But as I said, under discarnate electric conditions, we have new organs and new lungs.
Yeah, that's what we already see.
Beg your pardon?
We already see that.
Yeah. So as a result of that, you could develop a hermaphroditic body that will give birth through the throat. Because it's a rear-view mirror image, therefore can be made into an art form and mutated. So your premise is accurate. But I think it would be... the mixture of the flipping of the planes, of the inner and the outer, which the voice is the interval between. The word is the interval between the inner and the outer. And so, with electric conditions being post-linguistic, post-verbal, then we bring back the spoken word as an archetypal logos. And so it would have this primordial metaphor of giving birth. And so, I'm impressed with the way you... formulate this image because it's an accurate image. That's the right way to look for it because we get birth.
Right.
The mental can come through the physical organ of the mouth now.
Because one of the first dictums they hit us with when we arrived was something from the Bible. In the Word, and God spoke words.
In the beginning was the Word, yeah.
And then all of these creatures formed around this Word.
Yeah.
And that's already happening everywhere else. So why not here?
That's right. So to have it come through the throat is possible. But that is not the new ground we live in. The birth would be... The problem for the new souls is that image is only temporarily viable because as we move further into the discarnate state... Then
2020.
Past 2020, then we lose any anthropomorphic reference point. You don't have a hermaphrodite or any male-female situation. Where are they going to get born through?
So that's just like... That's a holding.
Why is he taking that? Just, wow. He'll be here in a minute.
Yeah.
They're going to poison us.
Yeah, I think they found out who we are. Yeah, so...
Yeah, I'm glad you say that.
Yeah, and you recognize the point I'm making of the problem.
Oh, totally, I see, because yeah. I knew right off. The first thing you think of when you step down, you think, this isn't going to last.
This isn't what?
This isn't going to last.
Right.
This is just a thread. It's leading everyone into their ship. But it all comes through you.
And that's why my spoken word is so powerful. I'm like the last effort of the throat to remain viable.
Oh, yeah. No.
What about him?
His throat.
What about it?
His viable throat.
Well, yes. I mean, that's why he's so excited about what I'm saying, because it reinvigorates his throat, because it gives him new things to conceptualize and then eventually verbalize.
What about people that don't have a throat? No throat.
Well, I'm prepared for that. Because I just said I'm giving the throat a re-archetypalization, but I don't depend on that myself for livelihood, because I'm aware of the post-body situation. You know, so it's very easy to put slack into throat communication, because it's so old and so gracefully viable for manipulation. But it's the real strain and struggle is in the present, you know, in the real problems, the real environment.
Hi, Bob. Oh, God, you had my monkfish. That was fun.
Yeah, the guy took it. You want to bring it back in?
Oh, that's okay. Oh, yeah, bring it back. Sure.
Yeah, he thought it was getting cold.
So, Bob, do you personally object to people using you for their own financial gain?
No, because money's obsolete. Money's a poor man's credit card, you know, that stuff. And, I'm here to release. This is why I incorporate LaRouche in the Holy Offices. Is that if he took over the IMF and the World Bank, he would lend money out to everybody, kind of like a guaranteed income, which the Pinks won't do. So they're keeping us under that old style of accounting. So LaRouche expresses through his economic program total slack in relieving the third world debt. Your throat.
Sorry.
Don't lose your throat.
I only have a little throat.
Okay.
So, but, you know, LaRouche is kind of a homophobe and all these evil things, yeah.
But, you know, nobody's perfect, right?
Right. Right. See, it's good. You take what you like and you leave the rest.
Yeah.
So, Bob, are you familiar with... Have you
but I didn't finish that point.
Sorry.
So, I think money is public property.
Okay.
Basically. So, if people make money off me, it's no sweat off me. Because the new wealth is in slack and generating information. That is the new ground, and that's the crisis with the economy. So anybody who wants to make money off me is going to get temporary slack, but it'll run out if he thinks that's the be-all and end-all, just to get money. So I wait till that real problem hits them, and then they come and they give me all my money back just to get the new wisdom. You know what I mean? Go ahead, next question. The next one.
Now, Bob, does Bob take smart drugs?
I don't know. Connie gives me a lot of stuff to eat, a lot of interesting new compounds. I don't know what they are. But I'm sure they make me bright and cheerful.
Do you know more about this?
Connie has done a lot of research on
real medicine.
Yeah, real medicine.
Real medicine.
Homeopathic medicine. Yeah,
acupuncture, Bach bar remedies. As a matter of fact, we should have brought the picture. You don't have it. There was a sign in front of our building for a year. It said Doctors for Bob Institute. B.O.B. Now, the Pinks would come around and say, what does Bob stand for? Well, we knew what it stood for, but it is the name of the band that Stang uses in his church. But Carolyn's cover story was it stood for Building Organic Bodies, which was believable because she does do that.
She's
Canada's greatest doctor. And she's now getting ready to set up a whole operation. And you can't write about this yet because it's going to be a major press conference. So this is off the record.
You can't tell these guys anything off the record, I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, then I won't say that next sentence then. But
you already told me.
Yeah.
About her age.
Yeah. And, but the inventor, No, I'm not going to say that.
How did Bob know to get the exact right thing?
What?
This?
Because I'm from Nova Scotia. Temporarily from Nova Scotia.
They're very like them. Are they similar to like people from Maine and stuff? It's not far, right?
Yeah.
They just came back a couple months ago.
Connie, where's she from? Where's she living?
Oh, Connie's about the same age as me, a little younger, but...
7 years?
Yeah. And she looks about 28. 30. 31.
30,
31
yeah.
Now, Jerry? Yeah. And she... we did undercover work in World War II, but because Lyndon Lewis in 1948 wrote the book America and Cosmic Man.
Great book.
You know that book?
Love Lyndon Lewis.
Yeah. He was the guy who gave Marshall his knowledge. Did you know? Not many people know that. Lyndon Lewis came here. Do you know he was a Canadian citizen?
Yes.
Yeah. He was born off of Nova Scotia.
Why do I like Canadians? I like Marshall McLuhan and Lyndon Lewis.
Yeah, and Lewis is the main slack giver to McLuhan. Now, if you're interested in the story, Lyndon Lewis was born in Nova Scotia. His American father, also I think maybe to his wife, I'm not sure, but there was a British citizenship. The guy had American, British, but because Lyndon Lewis was born on the yacht as they're going up and down the East Coast in 1882, the same year as James Joyce, he was born in Canadian waters.
What year was that Chinese astrology?
Oh, I don't know. Remember that Finnegan's Wake, that the symbol Joyce used for his book was the Chinese symbol for mountain, and the word was chin. So there's a pun about China in the title, Finnegan's Wake. It means man. Chin means man.
All right.
Anyway, that's multilingual. But Wyndham Lewis and Joyce were the main dialectic of the pound era, as Hugh Kenner calls it. And
it was.
And Joyce.
And the mantra was make it new.
Yeah. Good. And make it new. Make sense. Make sense. Make it up. So the.
How would you say a pounder say make it new?
Yeah.
Whatever you do, make it new. Go on.
And so Joyce, since he and Virginia Woolf and Wyndham Lewis were all born in the same year, 1882.
Really?
Yeah. That is a triad in Finnegan's Wake, the three characters. And Joyce had an ongoing battle critically with Lewis. They took opposite views as a game. And this is parodied in the Ant and the Grasshopper section on page 414 to 419 in Finnegan's Wake. And the Ant is Wyndham Lewis, the working guy, and Joyce is the Grace Hoper, or the Grasshopper. So that dialectic between Joyce and Lewis is not very well known. But Marshall never met Lewis. But when World War II, he never met Joyce. But when World War II happened, Lewis came back to Canada. So he spent the early 40s in Toronto. And he wrote a novel about it, came out in 54, called Self-Condemned. About his
work. Self-Condemned.
Yeah.
I never read that one.
But it came out, it's about his life in Toronto. Yeah. He wrote this novel about his life in Toronto. McLuhan is a character in it. But he met Marshall in Windsor, and Marshall took him down to St. Louis, where Marshall was teaching in 1944.
Uh-huh.
And he got portrait gigs for Wyndham. But when they met, it was the fact that Marshall learned from Lewis was that just as an artwork, music or a painting or a sculpture, is what Marshall would call a teaching machine, and Lewis would call it a teaching machine, he pointed out to Marshall that our technological environments, not the specialist little disciplines of fine art painting or music or sculpture, but our environments are teaching machines.
Exactly.
So when Marshall realized that the environment did the same thing as an art form, then he realized the environments were art forms, and then he developed his media knowledge. And he says it. It's done in documentaries he did in the 60s on CBC. He says, I got it all from Wyndham Lewis. It's a very little known thing.
He says it on TV.
On radio. We have it in our archives. The guy says, right out of the blue. He never talked about it very much. Because Wyndham Lewis was like the Lyndon LaRouche of the 80s. He wrote a book, Pro-Hitler.
Oh, yeah. He was he and Pound would toy with the fascists.
Right.
And all that.
And they got bad reputations and basically banned in the 30s.
Yeah, you never hear about Wyndham Lewis.
No.
And he was really an incredible guy.
Oh, yeah. He was.
Really was.
You read his books.
I mean, his thinking was incredible.
Yeah.
His books were not...
His criticism.
Great novels. They were great thinking.
Yeah,
he
great
was
thinking. Oh, yeah.
That's what it was.
And
it was a thinking man's novel.
And he was thinking out the stuff that he, Pound, and Eliot, and Joyce talked about in Paris. And so you can read in Time and Western Man the understanding of the eye-ear dialectic in Ulysses and then in Finnegan's Wake. that nobody knew until Marshall picked it up and then made it into a satirical interpretation of Finnegan's Wake and the whole history of man. But Lewis has it in his criticism written in 1927. So what was funny, it's interesting the way history works, that McLuhan met the antithesis of Joyce, but the mirror image, the guy who knew as much as Joyce, but had to take the opposite strategy, because you have to have your own niche, right? Your own little level at that point in history. So he never met Joyce, but he met the opposite. And through Lewis, he apotheized Joyce in the sense that he understood what Finnegan's Wake was about, and that made him famous. So Joyce's antagonist created the man who would make Joyce relevant to the future. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing about Lewis.
Interesting.
So, why did you bring that up? How did Lewis get into this?
Last time Tim Leary wasn't in town, first thing he said, he goes, "Nothing I have ever said has been original. I copied it all from McLuhan."
Yeah.
The first thing he said, even, what's the one, Tune In, Turn On? He goes, "I didn't really say that. It was McLuhan."
No, McLuhan gave it to him.
Yeah.
It's in flashbacks.
Yeah.
He hired McLuhan for consultation on how to popularize the psychedelic movement. And McLuhan came up with that phrase. If you look in the book, flashbacks.
Well, yeah, McLuhan was unbelievable. There's no question about it.
But McLuhan would have nothing to do with Leary. He did not like what he did. But McLuhan was like a secret counsel 10 guy. He worked in multi levels. He worked with the mafia. You have to work with all these people because it's an imploded world. And that was, I did an interview in New Zealand for this CD. And I was telling this guy that I think I'm qualified to run the secret counsel 10, despite the fact I have these personal stains on my character of what I had to do in the 40s and 50s. I had to kill people, I had to do money laundering, all the bad things you did under Big Brother operations, you know. But that's the way society is now. We don't realize how imploded we are, and those standards don't apply anymore when you're really running the show.
Now, if you didn't have McLuhan working in your brain right now, what would be left?
All the other holy opposites. They're all equally powerful. But just there's a figure-ground relationship. When the audience shows up with some kind of mood, you have to pick the right figure to echo it or to satirize it or to mirror it. And so I will use Mae Brussels sometimes, I will use Dr. Beter sometimes, Cosmic Awareness, Joyce herself, or I'll use McLuhan, depending on the situation. But since the Berlin Wall went down and shoved into everybody's face the fact that happened 50 years ago, or in radio times, 70 years ago, the global village, it's now a global theater, which is Marshall's main point, that nobody popularized. The global village happened under radio conditions, but because this is now obvious with the Berlin Wall going down, there's an incredible revival of McLuhan going on.
There is.
In academics? It's
very much so. In poets, yeah. All sorts of places.
You're all rereading
in New York City.
Yeah.
Like I have some poetry friends, they said, Gotta read McLuhan. I said, I read McLuhan 20 years ago, and it was like, no big deal.
Well, Stang said, Stang said, we were taught this in high school, he said. He didn't know why to read McLuhan. But
no, I love McLuhan, but I get the point. I understood it immediately.
Yeah, you did the work when you were supposed to, 20 years ago.
I guess that's why people are picking it up now.
Yeah, they're late. But since McLuhan is the public mood preference figure right now, it's my job to hike up my knowledge of McLuhan and push it further.
I see.
Well, the McLuhan Center is taking McLuhan's work and expanding on it. Whereas they haven't yet.
Yeah, you read the liner notes. In the liner notes, it's an essay by Nelson Thaw. I'm the true inheritor of McLuhan. And we prove it in our Ad News column because I can make new percepts about McLuhan's knowledge rather than just get people to learn what McLuhan said. I can go past it and develop it, which nobody in the world can do. And that's why our Ad News.
Have you ever thought of like teaching universities?
Teaching on a bigger scale.
Yeah, but I mean, still, people are still at that level.
I've been asked, but they don't realize, you know, the multi-level responsibilities I have, being chairman of the Secret Council 10. So it would really interrupt my time. So I told them, look, tell your kids to listen to my radio show once every 2 weeks. It's as good as a course. And so some of them will do that.
Where
so
is this? What the station is on?
It was on C. Kellen for 4 years.
C. Kellen, what's that?
C-K-L-N.
What is that? Local, what kind of station?
College. But it has a very big, it has 2 million people who can get it. It's a good signal.
It's a community station.
But it goes out over
what's the college it's associated with?
Ryerson.
Polytech. It's not even a college.
It's a unique college station in that it also has the community of the city supporting it. So it gets half its funding from Ryerson and half from the city.
So it can offer a broader spectrum of information than just the college reference point.
But I think through Bob's four-year tenure at CKLN, there were probably at least 10 attempts at overthrowing Bob and getting him off the air. And each time, Bob just
wrote it out.
But have you finally succumbed?
Well, because I had to move.
Yeah.
No, it was important to do it now. So I fooled Tom.
You had to move.
Yeah, we're moving to
you and Tom.
States, yeah.
Where?
It's going to be based in New York and L.A., going back and forth. And because with this AIDS cure, we're going to be doing a lot of international seminars and teaching. And
when can we meet Connie? Where's Connie Ryan? She's in Toronto?
She's not in Toronto today. She has to go down to New York and over to L.A. to help set up these clinics, so she's not always here right now. Remember, you phone our home number, you'll hear Thursday she's not in Toronto. She's often here, you know, when she gets a chance. But she's not regularly here. So it'll be hard to get her this week. In the future, if you want to...
Yeah. Does Bob have a sex life?
No.
Oh, that's right. So
live.
What'd you say?
Live. Bob used to go on air every 2 weeks. In both.
Play tapes with me and Cardi in the back room, you know. You can't have sex physically nowadays with the electric environment. So you have sex discurrently through the telephone, through tape recordings, through television, radio. You know, electric sex, discurrent sex. Discurrent penis is what I advocate. So it's like quadrisexual. You know, it's easy to be unisexual, bisexual, or trisexual, which I would say trisexual would be with any other form of matter.
Right, that's me.
Animals or plants or pillows. Okay, mm-hmm. But there's a fourth level of sex, the discarnate electrified, no body sex.
Oh, that's what Annie Sprinkle's into now.
I heard that name. Who's that?
She's a post-porn modernist.
She should meet you.
Just in town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard of her.
I think she should meet Bob.
And she talks about telephone sex?
She'd rather meet Carolyn.
Yeah. I mean, they
something.
She needs something? Give her something?
Yeah.
Probably
joke. Yeah. Church joke. Yeah. Give her something.
She was the most famous doctor who's known for giving people something
that cures them. They don't know what it is, but it cures them. But, well, we're talking about the midwives with Mike. He mentioned midwives, and a whole big scandal happened on the island, the Toronto Island, that Carolyn, that Connie, her public name is Carolyn, and she had to testify at a midwife trial. But it was funny that you brought midwives up because that's the only time Connie's had a public problem in her role as doctor here in Toronto.
Now, do people publicly know you as Bob, or do they know you as something else?
Some people know me as other Bobs. Some people think I'm Bob Marshall. Some think I'm Bob Dean. Some people think I'm Bob Dobbs. I was mainly known in Toronto as Bob Dobbs.
What do you think you are?
Hmm?
What do you think you are?
Oh, the what, not who.
Yeah. I'm the mixed corporate media environment.
There you go.
And language is a medium. So I do have a name. Remember Joyce said, who gave you that numb? Who gave you that name? Who gave you that numb? All technologies and all languages numb you. So I wouldn't, I'm like Rumpelstiltskin. I'm not going to admit what I am. Because if I'm going to give you a name that you can tag on me, then I'm controlled. Remember Rumpelstiltskin? The little guy in the woods who sang and danced because nobody could guess his name. And
that's why you got to keep changing your name.
Yeah.
Don't get numbed out.
Well, we have a joke on a radio show. People used to change their names just to listen to the show, or when they were talking on the air, they changed their names during the conversation. I'm so worried about surveillance, you know.
Little did they know Bob was the surveillance.
Yeah.
I think that's going on. And Bob, I'm doing all this stuff and thinking Bob's in, you know?
Yeah, picking up on their
stayed,
side.
You know?
And that's why I had so much trouble at the station, because the staff who've been around a long time and became the executive, they started to notice that. They knew at least I was a double agent. And if I was triple agent, they didn't know what or what. They just realized, get this guy out of here. He ain't one of us. But they couldn't until it was time to go.
What do you think Jerry is? Is Jerry like a Sancho Panza? Or?
No, he's just a dupe. You know, he's just a
total dupe.
Guy who needs to make money,
capital
make a living. He hadn't have any money. And Thal picked him out of the... How did that get out? Yeah, it was like, he didn't know any of this stuff. How did we get even into this dove thing? I think you called me, you wanted a loan for something. Remember you called me up. I think how it began, how I get you in touch with Nelson. You called me up, you needed some money for something.
Yeah.
You need $10,000 because the death of vinyl took off, and you wanted to print up some new copies.
Yeah, we had orders for like thousands.
Yeah, he'd only made a few, right? And then it became popular, so all the stores were demanding it. So he called me up and said, Bob, I need about $10,000 to print up more copies. And I said, well, I always said I offered slack and access to wealth. He was one of the first people to ever take me up on my word. And now look at him. He calls me up. I said, okay, I'll send you Nelson. So a few days later, he's walking through that building with the owner. And you used to hear the way Nelson described it. Your fury was like, he was like in Disneyland, man. He was looking at all the secretaries, watched this Nelson Thal walk through. Little Jerry go along with his suit, just sort of with no money, nothing, the guy out of the gutter. And he walks right into this wealthy...
That's the funniest story I've ever heard. Keep it up. I'm going to orgasm.
Go on. Jerry's all... I mean, he described to me, you may not have known it, but you were so bug-eyed. He did not believe this was happening. This guy wrote him on a check for $5,000 and gave him the ability to put the CD out. I mean, the guy got slapped because nobody would believe. Most people don't believe me. They get slapped me, but they don't believe it on a practical level. So they never asked me. He was the first guy to ask, and he's now got a big record company.
It's my Jewish background.
It might be.
Yeah, I think so.
Nelson's Jewish.
Yeah.
That help?
Yeah.
But it's been...
Why did it help?
Huh?
Kindred spirit, or...
I think he...
knew you'd go
blood, you know.
He knew you'd come through.
Yeah, I think so. He didn't think I was dead. Was alone.
Yeah.
Wasn't that?
But what happened?
That's important.
Yeah, it's been a terrible identity crisis for him from day one, because he's dealing with us, and it's always beyond Jerry. Every idea he brings up, we ask him for his expertise. He says it. We tell him, "You're a fucking stupid idiot." You know, we put down everything you say. Right. The only brilliant thing he did, he brought.
Shows up.
He calls me an intellectual glib.
Or glib intellectual.
Did you start it, Jerry?
Yeah.
So
Jerry, could you stop this for a second? I want to look.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, hold on. Stop the thing from moving.
Oh.
What is this here? Well, when I come back, I got to call this woman who we're a half hour late to.
We're late to something?
Yeah. We're seeing this woman who's pretty intense. She is a works at this organization called Maggie's, and they are prostitute sex workers in Toronto.
Oh, Valerie, you mean it?
And her name is Gwendolyn. She passes out the condoms and clean needles on the streets. Friends of Annie. I want to meet her tonight.
Yeah.
She's going to show us some cool videos. You can come along. Unless it would fill it.
Not my scene.
No.
No.
What kind of videos?
Huh?
What kind of videos? Interesting.
Well, about their work. About their work.
Documentary sort of stuff.
And we're going to meet, there's a couple of gay hookers who do this sort of thing too. So.
Are you, we've got to be there by when?
Well, we're supposed to be there at 9:30, but I'm going to call her. She's like there all night.
Yeah, tell her.
Tell her with Bob.
Yeah, tell her until 11. Say, make it 11 or something?
What time is it?
Well, I guess she's going to be there anyway. It's 10.
Well,
now.
Whatever she wants to do. It's 10 after 9?
Yeah, it's 10 now.
Yeah, we're going to do at least another half hour, an hour, right?
Right.
Yeah, so tell her.
We'll do a wind down at least.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the washroom. You're going to go to the washroom? I'm going to go to the same direction.
So, we should get into what your concerns are.
My concerns.
Yeah, you press that for stop, the black one.
Wait. Where do you think you'll be when you give birth?
I love Bob.
I'm going to get everything I want. So when I give birth?
Where do you think you'll be?
I'll be on that transition point, getting to that point.
You'll be the last one over, right?
Yeah. I'll be, since I'm the one who's so confident that we're going to find the God collectively that we know we can someday and will, then I'm willing to play the suffer role, not in a Christian way or Christian.
No.
Bob's not. Bob takes a while.
Yeah.
Is that some coffee then?
Coffee?
Jerry coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
Mike coffee? No.
I don't drink coffee.
I don't drink coffee either. Bob, does Bob drink coffee?
Oh, no.
Never? Never have a drip of it?
No, I never had any. I never had it. I have this one. One is the growth.
Bob, why isn't the tape recorder on?
It's going. See the red light's going?
Okay, Bob.
There you go. You're trying to play around with the electric environment. It's not on. Now that he's promo for his radio show, why isn't the tape recorder on?
Before we finish.
But we didn't finish. Okay.
Say hi. I'm...
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm Jim.
Hi, we're the Monks. You're listening to Jerry Belanger's Unfortunate Sonic Casualties on CKLM.
Hi, we're the Monks, and you're listening to Jerry Belanger's Unfortunate
Sonic.
No, Sonic. Casualties on. No. It begins with a C. I'll give you that much.
CKLM.
Very good, Bob. You're learning.
Okay.
1-800-GET-MONK. You can't call it in Canada. It's a very Bob thing right there. But you can call 212-465-3231.
No. You're complaining?
It's a long cart. Okay.
No, try it again.
Yeah. Oh, this is a cart. Oh.
Yeah.
See, okay.
Do it again with him ready this time.
Say it again. See, I'm low on blood sugar. This is one of my problems.
He's Gerald, too. Okay. You're listening to Gerald Belanger. Unfortunate Sonic Casualties on CKLM.
Unfortunate Sonic Casualties.
I normally get this, but I'm low on blood sugar. You're listening to Gerald Belanger's Unfortunate Sonic Casualties on
CLRN.
CKLN.
Very close, Mike. Let's try that again.
Let's start again, but tell me who you are then.
All right. Hi, I'm Jim the Mad Monk.
You are.
Okay. Okay, Mike. Let's try it again. Hi, I'm Jim the Mad Monk, co-publisher, co-editor, co-dependent of Monk the Mobile Magazine.
I'm Michael Monk.
And you're listening to Jerry Belanger's Unfortunate Sonic Casualties on...
CKLN.
Very good, Bob. Remember, if you want to reach the Monks, it's 212-465-3231. And if you want to reach Bob, tune in every time Jerry's on the air.
That's good.
Okay, that's a good one.
Okay, please. Bob comes back. Okay.
What are we doing?
Oh, it's just for my radio show.
You have a promo line that you play during the week or during your radio show.
Oh.
Okay.
But,
You're getting down to business.
I didn't feel I finished that the point. Is that you're not going to have...
Can't finish it now.
Right.
No.
But I think...
You have to finish it on the wire.
Yeah, your question was a red herring. Right? It was a red herring, your question.
No.
So our consultation was a red herring.
Red herring. I don't know if it's...
Red herring means...
It's a misleading.
This is the point 22, which was very. I don't know if you picked that up earlier or not, but that's the point. Or maybe that's the red herring.
Yeah.
And this is the point.
To distract you. It's a distraction from what's really going on. It's subterfuge. Mm. So your question of telling me that you have tried everything and not gotten out of here, not escaped yet.
Oh, who wants to escape?
It's a red herring question. Yeah, see, that, who wants to escape is too much fun. Now, you know that. But you will never fully believe it or feel it. But that feeling of that is the little incompletion that you've got to, as Krishnamurti says, go into. You've got to accept your incompletion. You got to basically accept the pink in you. You know what I mean? You are a boy.
Can we put the tutu on there?
No. Let me just hold it like this. Right?
Corporate. Bob, this might take a few seconds, so you have to go into one of those things.
That's a red herring again, though.
Actually, can I get Jerry in with this?
No. A solo Bob.
He's afraid to be seen.
He doesn't even admit he knows me in New Zealand radio and national Canadian radio.
I had nothing to do with the CD.
Do you want to get a shot with me with the mic? You get a shot with me. The Monks.
You take it. Self-shot.
No, you just take it.
No, self-shot.
Well, no, Jerry, I don't want to do it. Jerry, you just do it. Jerry, you do it. Mike for some reason... Mike doesn't want to.
Mike's doing nothing.
Mike just won't shoot Bob. Okay.
He doesn't want to shoot Bob.
I think I know why, though. You know, in Hopi tradition, if you take somebody's photograph, you steal their soul.
Yeah. Let me take you against the
camera. I didn't know that.
You got to watch that. Okay, but we're okay.
Oh, we're going to do it? Okay, let me move this so we don't get it. Are we going to put this in between our cheeks? Like, hold it with
our
cheeks?
Oh, that's a good one, Bob. Two.
Yeah, keep it on. Two. Can I just get by this?
You sure can.
Thank you.
Well, you want us to bet on it? I think you will get by.
Listen, when you reach 70, if you can make those hurdles.
I'm what do I get?
Well, let somebody say to you what you said to me.
I'll let them.
He looks like George.
I know. They always have told me. He's a famous politician of days gone by. And he was in most recent times he was Minister of the Veterans Affairs, but he was that tells you how long standing he is.
Yeah.
And he looked, my husband looks like.
Oh.
Or he looks like my husband.
Uh-huh.
And I'm 70 years old. It's hard
and
to
I am.
I'm 70.
We're both. You're 70.
I'm 70. Look at me. Would you believe
Wonderful. Well, we both are.
There is hope.
There is hope. You know that? There's hope.
What is this thing you got?
What is hope?
Oh, 22.
The nature of metaphor.
You know,
22 is a marvel thing.
Don't believe that. Mar-
22 is a marvelous thing. Will it flash or not?
No, well, it was a marvelous thing.
You're 22 right now. You
we are. No, yeah. We don't.
You could tell.
Oh, I feel it.
I see it in your eyes.
I just feel it.
You feel
it? That's what I look like.
Yeah,
I feel
feeling.
Like.
You look 22.
Thank you. That's what I feel like.
See? The looks are matching how you feel.
I got a son older than you and a daughter older than you and 7 grandchildren and, you know.
Okay, we're going to do this.
Can you stay here 1 second, though? Michael, you do this? Because Jerry's having a hard time.
I keep hitting the... Oh, there it
goes. Do it again.
And
one more time.
What is it, CBC?
This happens to be for CBC.
CBC.
It has to be for CBS and for CBC.
Okay, CBS.
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 Okay, hold it.
Yeah.
Put your your hand down. And, put your hand down.
Oh, okay.
Have fun.
Put your hand down.
Have a good time, guys.
Two.
Metaphor. A is the B, is the C is the D.
Okay, thank you.
Marshall McClellan.
You're a great politician. I mean. Adios.
Linda LaRouche. Okay, then we're going to hold it with our cheeks, right? Like this. Now you got to press again. Oh, wait.
No, it was so good the way it was.
I must have got at least 3 there.
Bob, you're excellent.
Yes, right. Excellent. An excellent guy.
Okay. We got it.
No, we're going to do it like this.
Oh, okay.
Our cheeks are holding it.
So I got the whole city behind you, too.
That's what we want. Okay.
Two skits
coming
through. That's right. Two total skits. You got it right here, man. Total six.
Quadrisexual.
Quadrisexual.
Get the Maggies onto that. That's a term for fitting his weight, the Maggies. And they call themselves the Maggies today?
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally, the whole evening.
The section, the theatrical section of Fitting His Weight is called Mick and the Maggies. So you got Mick Jagger in there, and you got the Nick Cave, and you got Maggie Tudo. It's embedded in the phrase Mick and Maggie. Mick and Maggie got together, apparently.
Mick and the Maggies.
And Mick Jagger and Margaret Trudeau? Margaret Trudeau.
Oh, you didn't know about that?
No.
That was in 77. Well,
she was a real slut, though, wasn't she?
Wow. That's the public.
Any jokes where who hasn't slept with Margaret
Trudeau? Well, you didn't know they got together at the Elmo Combo in March 77. Mm-hmm. Well, you were only about 5 years old, then.
Mm-hmm.
When were you born? 70?
69.
So you were 8 years, so you didn't hear about that. Yeah, you remember that story about Jagger. Jagger got together.
I would even know Trudeau.
Gary Trudeau does Doonesbury.
Yeah, no, Pierre Trudeau.
Oh, Pierre Trudeau is a real, like...
Americans know him.
He slid down the banister at the UN. Come on.
Did he really?
Yeah.
No, he was one of your best prime ministers. Yeah. Real crazy guy, right?
Yeah.
Fun.
Good friend of McClellan's.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. You get the letters of McClellan where he has incredible letters he wrote to Marshall that are published in the new book, Letters to Marshall McClellan.
Really good.
What happened to Pierre? What happened to him?
He just lays
low.
He's
a lawyer, eh?
Yeah, he's a lawyer in Montreal. He just lays low. He fights Mulroney on the Canadian unity issue. He doesn't believe in free trade. He was against free trade, I think. And he's just a devout nationalist, you know, and kind of obsolete now because nationalism doesn't have any power anymore.
It did for a while, right? Are you about to secede? Is that ever going to seriously happen? No.
Oh, well, Canada's the only...
I mean, Quebec, I mean.
No, but Canada's the only nation that started off as a colony, became a nation, then became a colony again. And we've been a colony of Britain and the United States, and now we don't exist at all because we're a colonization of the whole world. And so this creates an identity crisis for the 5 regions of Canada. And Quebec is the main one you hear about, but all the regions of Canada are in a separatist mood.
Really?
But that's natural under electric conditions because electricity decentralizes.
Right.
So it's not a problem. And they'll try to keep Canada together as some kind of fake.
Is this on pause, Bob?
No, it's going. See, you just need to look like this at this.
Oh, see? Bob. See, Bob.
See, it's going.
You're always using your brain. That's important.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. We just kind of...
And so they're going to keep the Canadian visual space fake going. But in reality, the power is going to shift to Vancouver, Ontario, and this Rust Belt zone is sort of in trouble. And the world economy will go where technology dictates it to go.
West.
Well, whatever. Yeah, go 14. Go Lemurian. To Lemuria, remember that in the occult literature? It's in the Pacific Ocean. Atlantis came out of the Atlantic Ocean.
You know that stuff.
Yeah. You go Lemurian.
So Toronto is a dying city. Not dying, but it's not.
No, it's the Switzerland of the solar government. It's in that interval position between the United States and Europe. It's the capital of the multi-border function of Canada. We're the only country that has so many border lines. We have the United States, Russia, Greenland, but we have internal border lines. We have the Inuit or the Eskimo nations, and we have the Indian nations, we have the French nations. We have all these multi-interfacing border lines. And so Toronto is the money launder center for international corporations, so it will remain viable as itself. But outside of Toronto, it will fall apart. They need to keep this financial center, but especially for the European oligarchy to battle the old Rockefeller American power. So Toronto will survive. But the rest of Canada is in trouble.
But Vancouver is not.
No. I mean the rest of non-city Canada. Non-major city Canada.
Really?
Yeah. But we'll just give up. People just realize they can go anywhere.
Because you're saying Canada doesn't really have an identity because it has been... It's been Americanized, it's been anglicized, etc.
And see, and curiously, the fact that we don't have a strong national identity makes us better equipped as people for the 21st century. So Canadians are better...
Exactly. Well put, Bob. Yeah. That's a really very true statement.
So you have this paradox where we go through the agony of Canadians realizing what really being Canadian is, and they have to throw off the old notion of being a Canadian, which is a national identity. That's not going to survive.
Oh, yeah.
But then they're going to realize, wait a minute, the real nature of Canada was not this visual space container box. It was our multi-border, low-profile, interfacing, dialogue-y kind of country, very important in the United Nations, that is the necessary function for roaming the planet over the next 10, 15 years.
Right.
So Canadians will realize that. And I talk about that on the show and get them to realize it.
Yeah. So I guess anybody who's like me who's been like, and Michael and probably all of us here, like, we're bored with nationalism, you know, 30, 40 years, 20 years ago in my case. I mean, it's like, what's taken so long for the world to catch up to be a transnational thing?
Well, the problem is that the tribal, the undeveloped, non-Westernized countries are just now moving into visual space. And so they're going to put on nationalism as a new novelty for them as we go corporate and international. So you have a dialectic that's contradicting itself. So even though the Western electrified kids could give up their nationalism, the rest of the world can't, because they're just moving into that phase of development. They're called the developing nations. They're still developing as nations. And their problem is, how are they going to develop that old visual space framework in a world that does not have visual space anymore? And that's why the third world's in real trouble. You know, starvation, they can't make the leap. And it's partly our fault, because we're inflicting this electric environment on them that...
Too soon, you mean?
Too fast, too soon, and irresponsibly, and not taking our responsibility for the effects we're creating. So we're just getting mean, which is channeled through the IMF. The Pink Prison is channeled through the IMF and the World Bank. So, that's a problem.
So, what's Bob's view on the environment? What should the United States have done at Rio?
Would you laugh?
Mm-hmm.
I say turn it off. That's on the CD.
Same question.
What's Bob's view on the environment? I say turn it off. But I mean the electric environment. Temporary fast so we can regain our bearings.
That's right.
You know, not the old environment is ridiculous. The natural environment, that is so culturally conditioned and puny compared to the new environments we live in, that's why it can become a very popular issue, this eco-fascist mode that they're locking down in Rio de Janeiro right now, you know, the Earth Summit. Anybody can think of the planet as this little ball, or as nature's a wonderful artifact. But we're ignoring the fact that we've created new nature, which is our man-made environments. And that is
so complex that we don't want to focus on that issue or that image or that problem, so we retrieve an old obsolete idea of the of nature as a divine animal, and we can go around and starve people in the name of saving the forest and all these problems that will frustrate third world development. Development in the third world, frustrate that.
No, but not people. Some people say you can ecologically develop. You can do it ecologically and profitably.
Not under electric conditions. And here's the paradox. Electricity retrieves a great nostalgia for old nature, for the original nature, but making it impossible, living at the speed of light and being discarnate, to be in touch with the old nature and to actually consume it more ferociously. So if we really wanted to save nature, we'd have to turn off the new electric nature. But paradoxically, the new electric nature makes us obsessed with the old nature. See? It's a weird reverse psychological, sociological thing that's happening. You know? It's a catch-22 is what I'm saying. That's the other meaning of
no, I can understand how electricity has allowed us to be aware of what's happening in the old nature. And that's
right.
Truly what's happened. But I don't think it's true that to save the old nature, less developed nations need to follow what we have done in building.
Oh, no, they don't have to do that. No,
I really think that we can live and we can create an environment that is not going to destroy nature.
Right,
nature.
But you know, you have to know how to do
that.
You have to. That's what Bob's find out what Bob's Media Ecology is. That's the name of the album. That's what the point is. That we cannot save nature under the present conditions. So if we want to save the first nature, we have to define the problem and recognize that the new nature, the electric nature, is causing the problem. So you turn that off when you got the whole world stoned on an LSD kind of environment, or even a heroin environment. How can anybody get anything down in the old terms of practical efficiency until you get them off the drug? So you have a temporary media fast, you turn off the electric environment, then we say, oh, this is what it is, and the world's slower, then you can fix up the old stuff. Then you save the third world. Now, if we turn the electric environment on, it's going to make you tribally obsessed with building visual space and want that old form of Western development. It will make you naturally retrieve that crowd
dynamic. So you think it's like McLuhan said, it's just like that it's inherent within. But I don't agree with that because, you see, we have that electric space in America. We have what you're saying.
There's no we that has it.
Okay, but to paraphrase what you're saying is, simply put, is that we have this this space, this, let's say this TV space,
yeah,
the vernacular term,
well, America. Computers, telephones, satellites.
But TV
okay.
is the main thing here.
All right.
Because TV, as it is now, is not interactive
right.
for most people.
Right.
Okay. So that mentality, which is a kind of passive reception of things, okay,
yep.
causes people to, a lot of people argue, you know, be out of touch with
yep.
nature.
Right.
Okay, which is not passive. You're in nature. It's
yep.
interactive. It's holistic. That's
right.
the word we use to describe nature, right?
Yeah.
So you're arguing quite right. Everybody, a lot of people have said that. If everybody's zoned out on the drug of choice, which is TV
yeah.
and computers and all that,
yeah.
then they will never get into nature.
That's
nature,
right.
nature.
Even though they're
Although,
watching many programs on their computers and TV about nature.
About nature.
You get the hypocrisy.
But I don't think that's true. Because I think that, like, there's a lot of people right now who you can have technology and still create, you know, harmonious nature. I mean, I don't think they're in conflict.
And you know, and we will do it when we have fusion energy, which is going to give us endless energy that will decentralize the money oil consciousness.
That, I don't think that's necessary.
That'll give
you
us
can
a
just live in the country, have a computer and a TV, and you
don't
watch it all the time.
Who's going to pay for your? Where
well,
are you going to get your electricity?
Because you
man.
Don't live. When you live, you
well,
have to understand you're everywhere when you use the electric environment.
Well,
you are on the
let's
whole
say you
planet.
Move to solar. I mean, you studied Avery Lovins in Colorado.
Yeah.
And the guy has a solar house. Everything's solar.
Oh, I know about Amory. I mean, you know, he's hung
how many people have
bit.
The resources to do what he does?
But even then, the fact is it's still electric.
That's right. You see,
solar still produces electric energy. And you're talking about the soul of electric.
Yeah, think of solar, S-O-U-L-A-R.
Yeah, because,
solar.
I mean, especially in esoteric
wisdom.
Science, they look at the next phase of humanity moving away from the organic compounds into the electric. They call it the fourth initiation, going into
the pollution.
Which, right, and it's all a part of our new physical body.
Yeah.
I mean, if they were look far in the future, our body is made of electric molecules instead of how we see it now.
Yeah.
But you're talking, like, the reason it's failing is because people are focusing back on the old way.
Well,
they're looking at organic compounds as being what we
No, I think, Mike, you can have both. See,
but you can't because the two don't join each other. They're two, like, totally separate, different energies. And it's like if everyone's out there saying we've got to stop all of this development because it's like destroying the earth instead of looking at this new ecology.
No, you see, here's the point. You can have your compost heap and your organic garden and your, you know, next computer. Yeah. I mean, that's a fact. And you can have your mobile phone while you're shoveling dirt. I mean, you can have both worlds. That's what's so great
but
about
right
now.
But they're not separate. You can have both worlds, but to have electric environments cause inflation, and it affects, you can, the people who don't have computers are affected by it as much as those who do have them. Because
you've
got to think
simple.
Of it.
Well, you basically, you know, the solution is to somehow move the third world to a level of economic growth without repeating our mistakes.
Right.
That's all that the world is really trying to do right now. In Rio and everywhere, we want to get them to where we are without them totally fucking up everything. Okay. Now, their argument is, wait a minute, if you put the restrictions, which you know that should be put on your economy, which you're doing already, whatever, smokes, you know,
right.
Things that are going to cut pollution out of your smokestacks to catalytic converters in your cars to fuel-efficient vehicles to solar-powered vehicles and all this stuff, okay? And, of course, limits on how much forest you can cut, which is what we're doing in our developed countries because we know what we've done to get to this point.
Yeah.
And we've almost fucked the whole thing up. So we're saying, okay, we're saying this is the third world now. Don't cut down the rainforest, you know. You can't drive this many cars. You got to have mass transit. You know, everybody can't have an air conditioner in India. So that's what we're saying to them. And they're saying, no, we want everything that you have. And we're saying, no, if you have everything we had, everything's fucked, okay? So the solution is, and that's where a lot of companies are getting smart, like in Germany and Japan, is they're saying, okay, we're going to develop technology that does not pollute, that still gets you to where we are. That's the next step.
Right.
The United States is behind on that. Germany's ahead on that. Japan is ahead on that. See, tractors that don't, you know, that run on maybe an alternative fuel. I mean, basic things like
that. But you're telling somebody who created that situation.
Oh, whatever.
Right.
I mean, here's the point.
Yeah.
We want to develop the third world in a way that does not destroy the organic natural world.
Right.
That's the environmental
problem. But what are the factors what are the factors of the problem? There are more factors than what you've laid out. The main factor is the electric environment. It causes inflation. It causes alienation, destroys cultural image, and so if every culture feels threatened, they will reinforce their need for cultural image, which is really what the third world says. We want to maintain our national identity in this new planetary culture. And we have created an electric environment that goes around that makes them obsessed with that desire.
You already admitted that they're obsessed. You said,
we want what they want.
It's
the same. No, here's this. You're talking about a whole separate issue. I'm talking about,
basic energy.
Smoke and
energy.
I'm talking about nitrous oxide and carbon monoxide and, you know, cutting down forests and the greenhouse effect, which is physical pollution and destruction
of the environment.
Electric environment
is physical.
Okay. That's true. But now you're talking about cultural. Okay, what you're talking about, one
the context
level,
we're
is
talking
hegemony
in.
Of U.S., the U.S. Western hegemony of our media has so interpenetrated the third world that they feel that they're buying Coca-Cola and watching Dallas reruns instead of, you know, what's happening really in Zimbabwe's true nature. You know,
on the
content level. That's the angst they're feeling.
Right.
Is that as Europe felt, as Canada feels, right?
Like, I can move it in faster. The very program you laid out, many people know that, what you said, and they're talking about it at the summit. The problem is, how do you communicate? If everybody on the planet knew that, you cannot implement it under electric conditions. That's the problem.
You're saying the nature of electric media cannot make it happen.
You cannot communicate.
I don't think that's true because we're already making improvements in our culture right now.
But we don't understand diseases it's causing.
Yeah.
Oh, if you're just talking about the effects of electromagnetic radiation.
No, not just that. No. That's the physical effects. There are also psychic effects.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you're having, the physical effects are taken care of by more people bringing that old nature into their life.
Yeah.
Old nature heals electromagnetic problems. That's fact.
People
live in the country, get their hands in the dirt, live this kind of simple lifestyle. it cures them of all the crazy high-tech diseases they get in the cities. Okay, that's
no,
a fact.
I don't think it does.
Oh, it does.
Because the electric pressure with the satellite, which goes around the whole planet, works on everybody's psyche, no matter what phase of technological development they're at.
Yeah, but physical illness is a result of how much electromagnetic
radiation. Why are farmers killing themselves? Why are the corporations buying it up?
They're not killing themselves any more than anybody else is.
No, the statistics are they are. A lot of suicide.
Could be because of the decline of the family farm.
That's what they think it is, but I bet you it's the alienating effect of the satellite environment. They feel so out of it. So removed from the dynamism of cities and population centers.
Not at all. I've been living in the country for the last 3 months, and the last place I want to go is the city.
Yeah, but you are allowed to live there. You have the mobility.
You sell the phone all day. You put it on.
You wear the country as a
costume. Are you on the phone all day in the city? Are you talking? Are you in the city at the same time as you're in the country? Are you on the phone?
What?
Are you on the computer?
Do you use a phone when you're in the country?
Yes.
So you're not in the country. You're on the phone.
No, I am plugged into the environment. You're right.
See?
Yeah.
And you can put it on. You have mobility. You can move back and forth.
True.
Put them on.
True. Well, I think that's the answer. I think that we all need to wear both.
Then where's then? But money is based on a hierarchy of values. If everybody has that freedom, then where's the value of discipline and work and all those problems? Where who's taking out the garbage?
Well, I mean, you're talking on such a
well. That's the way we work in the city council today. We're talking.
I know you are, but you've got to bring it down to reality.
Well, no,
you
we know, don't.
Everybody takes
we're
out their own garbage
these problems. For
everybody
you.
Takes out their own garbage. That's the bottom
no,
line of this universe.
Actually, his point about pollution is the new source of wealth. The companies that learn to mine garbage and retrieve the aluminum and all these metals and they're going to be the new wealth makers, and they're going to solve the pollution thing by mining the pollution, and that's physical
or recycling the pollution.
Mining it. Recycling in a sense, there's more aluminum in the garbage than there are in mines, you know, in the major big city dumps. But that's physical level of his metaphor is that we have to go into the noise and pollution, and we are mutating.
Well, your point that we have to shut off the media environment, the electrical environment,
temporarily,
will slow people down enough to deal with the fact that the river is full of chicken shit.
They'll look at their own well, and they'll say, hey, I've been pissing and shitting in my well. We put our sewer pipe a mile and a half out there, and 2 miles out, we take our drinking water. This lake right here.
Oh, I know.
But
are spinning too fast to see that. Is that what you're arguing?
Yeah, and also...
But you are too, Bob. You're spinning way fast.
No, I'm not spinning fast. Slack and generator.
Right.
I live a very private life. You know, I mean, by myself, much electric autonomous slack.
But you live in an electric environment alone?
Oh, yeah. But because I'm totally aware of the effects, I can echo it and speed with it and mirror it. But it isn't affecting me personally because I have comprehensive awareness. You know, I know what it's done to me. I know it. It's like you ask me what drugs my wife gives me. That's a one level of drug that I take. What about the drug of the electric environment? If I know what it's doing to me, then I get a handle on it. So, you see... So I'm saying that we create a new body. It has new arms, new legs. You just take your own body.
I agree with you there. But everybody's known this for years.
No, but it means we're all interconnected. So can't drop... We have a central nervous system extended. Our cars are an extension of our feet, in simple terms. Books and magazines, newspapers of the eye. So this corporate media political body or media body is wrapped around the planet. So if you touch any part of it, like you touch your part, it'll affect the other part.
Right.
So we're all so interconnected. And therefore, nothing can get out of that and get a leverage like Archimedes, get me off the planet and I'll move the planet. Remember that old thing? Archimedes
well, you know what you're arguing. This is what I debated all through college, this problem.
What course?
I went to Sussex and I studied media. I basically studied media ecology.
In England. That's Ray Williams and those guys?
Yes. There's a guy named that.
Yeah, Raymond Williams.
Yes, Raymond Williams.
That was their main anti-McLuhan communication school was at Sussex.
Well, this is the thing we talked about at Sussex, and I read a lot about, is they're agreeing to Marxism. Okay?
Yeah.
You've probably read Herbert Marcuse.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, he wrote this book called One Dimensional Man. Okay? And his whole theory is, Marcuse was actually, he loved the hippies. His big thing was the hippies, because the hippies were dropping out, literally. They're like not playing the game. In fact, they were not even playing the electric game, except for electric guitar.
They didn't know you couldn't drop out.
Yeah, well, that's
his
point.
That. Yeah.
That's his point. One Dimensional Man means... Yeah. You can't drop out. No, there was this illusion in the past when Marxist theory first came out, and that there was this idea of a revolution that would oppose the status quo and create something new. Okay, and what this group of thinkers called the Frankfurt School, which is a bunch of I think mostly Jewish thinkers who were, you know, had to leave Nazi Germany.
Adorno, Horkheimer,
and Marcuse, and a few. But Adorno was really great.
Yeah.
These were guys that realized that late capitalism was so, the word they used was hegemonic.
Yeah.
This is like common knowledge, you probably know it. It's so hegemonic that the idea of revolution. There's no revolution anymore because you come up with a revolution.
The global village happened in the 20s. It was locked down.
But it's like you have a revolution. It plans for revolution is what I'm saying. Okay?
It can roll with the punches.
It can roll with the punches. Yeah. That's what late capitalism is. There's no way to destroy it. It is so hegemonic. It can have revolution within it.
Yeah.
Radical revolution.
Right.
It can have it. So there's no way to... What the point I'm making...
Under electric conditions, it can have it within it.
There's no way to step out of it and say, look, that's capitalism. I'm outside of capitalism.
So you can close yourself off within it. I mean, you can build yourself a biosphere.
You can build yourself a biosphere, but that's planned for.
Yeah.
But you can't step out of it and say... Look at evil late capitalism, what it's doing to the world. Because when you say that, you're what late capitalism is saying.
Peter's asking, you'll put out a book about it, and they'll make money out of it.
That's the whole point of late capitalism, turning rebellion into money.
Public
like
fund.
Like the Flash said, that's what's happening in late capitalism.
Public fund for private profit.
That's it, or anything. Yeah. Anger is money. It doesn't matter what you are, who you represent.
What your mythic stage
we're going to make money off it.
Because it's a guaranteed environment. It's a guaranteed environment.
But what you're arguing is that turning off the media environment will somehow allow us to step outside of it. And what these guys were saying is...
Can't do that.
You can't do that because... That's just another game within the game.
But when were they playing this game? When were they talking
about it? They were talking in the 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
Everybody shuts off electricity, which isn't going to happen, but we shut it all off.
Remember what I say in my album? I say it's not going to happen.
But we want to make media ecology a water torture media topic, like Chinese torture, and everybody talking about it.
Oh, it's a great topic.
Then there'll be an alchemical effect.
But nobody cares anymore about revolution in this country, I mean, in America at least. I mean,
we're not talking about that kind of revolution.
I mean, even kind of... People are not interested in change.
What kind of revolution are you talking about?
Hogging the content, the way George Bush hogged the content with the Iraq War. So you had like 6 months of constant news on the war.
Right, you did hog it.
So we lock down Bob Rule. We make media ecology an issue. We hog it just like eco-fascism is kind of a prominent topic now. And then you have the corporate business-making machine talking about the ground they're in, not concepts or images of it, but about the actual electric effect.
Oh, I know.
Then that might
Instead
have a new
content,
alchemical effect.
The form.
Yeah, the form. Talking about the form.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that is something that any peasant can talk about once they've got the rigmarole down. And then that would be very interesting to see the alchemical effects of that.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's not going to change anything, but it's fun.
But what's going to change things is this fusion breakthrough, because that is a new environment on the energy level, and that's going to allow us to have free energy in every neighborhood, and that'll change people's psyches.
Yeah, but a lot of people come up with free energy theories and never pan out.
No, it's going to happen. This is the Utah group. They already did it in Utah. One of them was British. You know, Pons and Fleischmann.
I would love to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, it does make sense.
They proved it in Japan.
It makes sense.
There's a big suppression right now of the fact that it'll be confirmed by the end of this year.
If they're not all killed, if the whole team of them aren't killed, it's going to change the world, and that will be a revolution.
And it's being
talk of this about 5 years ago, wasn't there?
Somebody
came up with cold water fusion?
The same guy.
No, this is cold water fusion. Came out in March 90. It's been 2 years.
Yeah.
When did the Ezon thing, up in Alaska, the flood, the...
It was 2 years ago.
Exxon.
Yeah, Exxon or some kind of big ship.
LDs.
Yeah, that happened a day or so after the announcement of the fusion energy thing. So it was 89 or 90? 90? So we're talking 2 years, and they've confirmed it in Japan, but North Americans don't know that. And now several other labs in the United States have confirmed it. They're going to announce it within the next 3 months. So you're going to see it, and there is a holding on it. It could have been proved a year ago. But the oil corporations are a bit nervous about it.
Oh, those guys. They're nervous.
Yeah.
But actually, they're kind of smart. Some of them are trying to develop, like, alternative fuel stuff.
Well, because they know that their pot's running out anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, they see
the future.
Even though they have
oil.
A big monopoly.
Right. That's why they're so stupid. I don't get American companies. They're so dumb. Like, the German companies, the Japanese companies at least saw this 10 years ago. Any fool would have seen it.
There's a reason?
5 decades ago.
Remember, in 1700s, 1800s, America was a backward country. And so you could implement the new Gutenberg galaxy immediately. You couldn't in England because it had the feudal backlog. And so you didn't have the industrial.
So now you've got that here, you're saying?
So now we, the America became the successful, the archetype of going into the 20th century. So it's got such an industrial backlog. It's only in the backward countries that you can bring in the microelectronic reality. And that's Korea, Taiwan, Japan.
Japan was a very backward country. See, and that's why Japan is where it is. But Japan's going to reach its peak.
Oh, it's already.
And then it's going to be... See, that's what's going to really happen, is that the least developed country right now, at some point in the future, will be the most developed country. Overnight.
Yeah.
Because it happens to have taken the latest innovation.
And then it'll fall into the lap of the Japanese and the Germans and the Americans when they, since they've got obsolescence. They're going to fall into that obsolete container back at, you know, 1980.
Right.
And then they'll all recognize what the pattern is. And then that'll create a new alchemy, too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all interesting. This is going to be continued, right, Bob?
It's always continuing.